Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. President Bush has now left for a multinational tour, which will include stops in Poland, Russia, France, and then finally the Middle East. His first stop will be Poland, where he'll give the keynote address on the future of transatlantic relationships. And many diplomats on both sides are curious now to see how Mr. Bush will relate to his fellow European leaders following the rift over going to war in Iraq. The story from correspondent Priscilla Huff.
Vive la France. President Bush has managed to find common ground and begin to patch up the relations with France, badly fractured over the Iraq war. The ongoing food and humanitarian crises in Africa is helping to get the U.S. and France working together again, but that's not necessarily true of Germany. At the Group of Eight summit, all eyes will be on how Mr. Bush handles German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder, whether he gives a warm handshake or the cold shoulder. Then again, U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell's favorite metaphor for U.S.-European relations is that it's a marriage that's been in counseling for more than 200 years. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
Much like U.S. officials of late, British Prime Minister Tony Blair is now finding he has to defend the work of his intelligence agencies concerning Iraq. A senior British official recently told the BBC the original intelligence on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction was exaggerated to bolster the case for invading that country. Blair, though, says there's nothing to those allegations.
The idea that we authorized or made our intelligence agencies invent some piece of evidence is completely absurd. And what is happening here is that people who have opposed this action throughout are now trying to find a fresh reason for saying why it wasn't the right thing to do.
Of course, military investigators in Iraq have still found no concrete proof of weapons of mass destruction. Palestinian and Israeli leaders are expressing cautious optimism following talks between Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon and Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas. The pair met for about 3 hours yesterday to discuss the so-called roadmap for peace. Sharon pledged to end the two-week-old closure now of the West Bank in another 2 weeks as an act of good faith, while Abbas said he hoped some militant groups would in return end their bombing campaigns.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
It seems most people don't think the third largest tax cut in U.S. history is really what the country needs right now. Nearly two-thirds of Americans who took part in a nationwide poll said extending health care coverage to the nation's 41 million uninsured was more important. That survey, conducted while lawmakers were hammering out the details of a $350 billion tax cut plan, also shows more than a third of Americans are willing to pay more taxes to help pay for a universal health care plan. Researchers at Stony Brook University say the results demonstrate Americans are very concerned about rising medical costs and having health insurance coverage.
Right turn, right turn, right turn, right turn back to the dealership. That's a typical test drive. Now, GM introduces the 24-hour test drive. Bring home a GM car or truck. Keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
Well, I'm asleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
At least three people have been killed now after a car bomb exploded in northern Spain today. The country's prime minister has called off a planned trip to St. Petersburg also to deal with the situation at home. More from correspondent Suzanne Chisholm.
The blast in the northern Navarre region had all the hallmarks of the Basque separatist group ETA. The attack follows Sunday's nationwide municipal elections, the first since Madrid banned the radical separatist Batasuna party because of its links with ETA. The group is also listed as a terrorist organization by the United States and the European Union. Spanish Prime Minister Jose Maria Aznar had been due to fly to the Russian city of St. Petersburg for its anniversary celebrations. He will now remain in Spain. Suzanne Chislett, London.
Suspected serial killer Derek Todd Lee is being held now in the East Baton Rouge Parish jail without bond after being charged in the deaths of five women. The 34-year-old Lee is the primary suspect in the Louisiana serial killer investigation. Authorities in parishes across the state are digging into old murder cases to see if Lee may be linked to them. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Every era is known for its protests. In the 70s, it was anti-war. In the 80s, anti-fur. And when I come back, I'll peacefully demonstrate for a 90s revolution that's still the rage. And I lock brakes.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is, Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halfsies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
As the saying goes, you've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything. Well, anti-lock braking systems, or ABS, stands firmly for stopping and against locking. ABS originated in the aircraft industry, where stopping big, fast planes on short runways is critical. Adapted for panic stopping in cars, this sophisticated system uses a computer to sense when wheels are about to lock, then automatically regulates braking action. Now, don't protest. With anti-lock brakes, forget pumping. Just press firmly and let ABS do the rest. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Daring to connect the dots. It's the Peter Werby Show. Call 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Peter.
Well, gang, they're lying to you. I will connect the dots. My name is Curtis Ellis. I will be your host today. Well, welcome to my table here at Seppi's at the Parker Meridian Hotel in beautiful Midtown Manhattan on West 57th Street, just to the left of Carnegie Hall. And wow, have I got a great show for you today. You are so lucky to be tuned in to this radio station, because we have a very exciting show coming right up right now, right at you. Our phone number is 800-825-5937. You might want to call now, because you won't be able to get in with a crowbar later. The lines will be jammed, because this show is so exciting, I don't even know how to describe it to you. I have sitting across the table from me the producer of the most talked about movie of the season. This movie is called Capturing the Friedmans. And the man sitting across from me is called Mark Smerling. He produced it. He shot it. He is a modern-day Kurosawa. This movie has been compared to Rashomon, the Kurosawa film which has multiple points of view, and you don't know what the hell is happening because everybody sees it differently. Well, that's kind of what this movie is. But I'll let him describe it. It's a documentary about a family in Great Neck, Long Island, that was accused of some rather horrific crimes. Mark, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Curtis.
So what is Capturing the Friedmans? Since you made it, I'll let you describe it.
Well, it's a film about a family from Great Neck, Long Island, and they go through a tremendous crisis, and it really is sort of reality TV at its most raw and at its earliest stages, where you sort of watch this family crumble under tremendous pressure. Because they filmed themselves a lot, and we filmed a lot of the interviews with people who surround the issue, which is pedophilia, that sort of destroyed them.
So what we have here is the family Arnold Freeman and his sons.
Excuse me. Yeah.
And his son Jesse and Arnold are both accused of pedophilia.
That's right.
Arnold was a star teacher, an award-winning teacher in the public school system.
Yeah.
He also gave piano lessons to the neighborhood kids.
And he taught computer after school, which is the source of all the charges, is his computer classes that he taught after school to boys 8 to 13.
And he taught those classes with the help of his son, Jesse.
That's right.
Then the police discover a pornographic magazine in his home.
What happens is it was during the Ed Meese sting operations that were happening for child pornography. And
in the 1980s.
In the mid-80s. You know, there's a lot of this going on around. There was a lot of, it was a very heightened issue, child porn and pedophilia. There's the McMartin case was during that time. There's a lot of these cases around.
You're referring to the McMartin preschool
In California.
In California, which
That's right.
mass which, hysteria.
Exactly. And a lot of these cases have been reviewed since. And basically what happened is there was a lot of sting operations happening where they were picking mail up through coming from the Netherlands or coming from Europe that was considered child pornography. And they were picking it up and then sort of focusing on the person who was receiving the mail. And then they would create a correspondence between that person and a guy who would write to him and say, look, I have the same needs you have, and maybe we have something in common. Why don't you send me something? As soon as you send pornography through the mail, child pornography through the mail, you've broken a federal crime that is punishable by 10 years in prison.
So Arnold was not guilty of any crime by receiving this child pornography, but he became... He was entrapped into committing a crime when a federal agent asked him to send him something, and he did.
Well, I don't know if he was entrapped. I think that there is a lot of people who would say that he was entrapped, but I think the reality is he was tricked.
He was tricked. He was not in the business of sending kiddie porn pictures out, but a federal agent asked him to send him some. They did. And then they raided his house.
It actually took them 2 years to get him to send something to the mail.
Huh.
So he was sort of under the gun for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've just been joined by the director of the film, Andrew Jarecki. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you.
So now sitting across from the table from me is the producer, Mark Sperling, and the director, Andrew Jarecki, of Capturing the Freedmans, the most talked about film of the season. And we are telling the story of how this award-winning teacher, this star teacher in the Long Island school system, became a convicted pedophile, and how his whole family came crashing down around him. So the feds then found a pornographic magazine, a kiddie porn magazine, in his home.
Yeah, well, a postal agent delivered mm-hmm. the magazine to him, went away for about an hour, came back, and they raided his house. They found that magazine. They found a stack of other magazines. They also discovered a list of children's names that led to the computer classes, which was given to the Great Neck Police at that time. And then that started the whole investigation.
Right. Now it gets interesting. Now the story really takes off. An important part of the story of the film, an important part of the film is it's the Freedmans, what happens to the family, and the what I can only call mass hysteria, which is generated by these charges of pedophilia. I'll fast forward here. Essentially, they were accused of having some kind of bizarre child abuse sex orgies in the basement of their home under the guise of computer classes.
Well, actually, and specifically, they were accused of literally hundreds of these kinds of crimes. And, you know, now we look back on it and we see all these other cases like the McMartin case. And you see that, you know, in today's world, we think of these cases as being exaggerated, or we at least understand that it's possible that it's not as represented in the media, that there are these sort of satanistic sex rings, and that there are, you know, multiple adults and multiple children engaging in these activities. But at the time, I think it was a brand new idea in a way. And so when this comes out in the newspaper after the police showed up at the Freedman's house, everybody reads it and immediately thinks, oh, my God, I can't imagine that something like this could exist. But obviously it's in the paper. It must be true.
It must be true. It's written up in the paper. I see it on the 6 o'clock news, and it's happening right in my own town.
Yeah, it's very salacious stuff. So it sort of magnifies itself as it grows. It gets almost amoeba-like. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger.
There's something interesting about a case like this, which is that, you know, if this were a shoplifting case,
right.
People would look at it and they'd say, well, you know, there's some evidence here. It's a little confusing, but boy, it looks like the investigation had a lot of problems.
Mm-hmm.
That by itself is enough for me to sort of invalidate my initial conclusion. I can't send these guys to jail for shoplifting because you just don't know.
Right.
Well, because the downside of getting that wrong is that some people get off without having to go to jail for shoplifting, and some shoplifted merchandise doesn't get returned.
Right.
In this case, because it's a sex case, because it involves children, it's just the most disturbing kind of case. Who in their right mind is going to feel comfortable letting somebody off, giving them the benefit of the doubt? It's just the standard of care is raised so high in a case like this because no one wants to take responsibility for saying it didn't happen.
Right. So what happened was the police found this list of students who were attending the computer classes, and then they started interviewing the kids.
Well, there's an interesting line in the film by one of the detectives who said, well, you know, we were given a list of alleged victims, and we went out to do interviews. Well, he wasn't given a list of alleged victims. He was given a list of computer students. But it gives you a sense of how these kinds of things can get rolling.
Uh-huh.
Now, also, I think Mark and I both, you know, we were really tortured during the making of the film. It was so fascinating. It was so gripping that, you know, we were on the phone to each other. You know, he'd be interviewing somebody in Great Neck, and I'd be interviewing somebody in Mineola, and we'd be calling each other on the phone saying, you won't believe what this person just told me. You remember that thing we learned last night? It's not true. And so one of the fascinating things about this is just, you know, that you know, we certainly know that this story didn't happen as it was represented by the media at the time, and that's kind of what made us want to make the film. But on the other hand, you know, it's not that the film doesn't try to spoon feed you the conclusion and say, well, we know, because that makes us just like the police. Well, the police felt that they knew, and obviously they didn't know.
And plus, I think memories are so elastic. You know, that's one thing that is a huge theme in the film, is that memories are constantly changing and evolving as your position is changing and evolving. And it's really hard in the film to really believe anything at some point. What do you believe?
I'm speaking with Mark Smerling and Andrew Jarecki, the producers and director of Capturing the Freedmans, a documentary film which opens today. It is written about everywhere. It's been talked about. It's gotten great reviews. This is a film that documents the destruction of a family, which comes under fire under the pressure of multiple hundred count charges of child abuse, sexual molestation, and people went to prison for this.
Yes.
Well, it's very serious business, but, you know, at the same time, I think it's something that you can't take your eyes off of, because you realize that while it's such an extreme case, the reality is that the Freedmans are sort of like all of us. You know, it's one of the things that I think is so gripping for me about learning their story, is that, you know, they're not that different from us. You know, you'd see them in the paper and say, oh, that's a crazy family. But, you know, when we screen the movie, somebody will always walk up to us and say, oh, my God, that family is just the most screwed up family. But then usually it's that same person who comes up 20 minutes later and says, but, you know, I have to say, you know, that father kind of reminded me of somebody in my family.
I haven't even gotten to the best part of this movie yet, which is the fact that these people were home video happy and home movie happy people. By the way, I have a review of this up on the website, ieamericaradio.com. If you go to the website and then click on the entertainment page, there's a little picture of a movie reel there. It's a click here for reviews. There's a review of this film and a bunch of other summer films. And in that review, I say this is like the home movie, camcorder happy family. They taped and filmed everything. You've got pictures of the father as a kid. Then you got the kids as kids. This perfect suburban family growing up in the freshly minted post-war suburbs. And then when home video comes along, they're all shooting each other, and they're shooting the arguments that they're having as this case unfolds and the family starts to self-destruct. And it's absolutely riveting to watch these people, in their own words, in real time. You didn't have to go back and do any dramatic recreations of this.
Well, we really stuck to that as a rule. You know, we said there's going to be no narrator in this film. We're not going to have any hand-holding. It's going to tell itself. And the film does tell itself in that way. The story, for us, it was just our responsibility to try to convey the story and to, you know, just strap ourselves to this rocket story and try to tell it as carefully and as clearly as we could. The way that the home movies evolved is quite interesting. You know, originally, you know, we set out to make a film about a completely different subject, which was about professional children's birthday party clowns in New York City. You know, Mark and I sort of talked about that, and we said, well, this is an interesting little community. I bet you if we spend time with these people, there are heartbreaks, there's joy, there's interesting humanity there, and we'll probably find an interesting story. You know, I don't think we knew how interesting when we set out to work with David Friedman, who's the most popular children's birthday party clown in New York, but we eventually discovered that he had a secret story. Eventually, after we had spent a lot of time with David and gotten to know what he had in terms of his family story, he described to us that he had these incredible home movies.
Right. I'm speaking with Mark Smerling and Andrew Jarecki from Capturing the Friedmans, the makers of the most important film of the season. My name's Curtis Ellis. The phone number here is 800-825-5937. Do keep listening because there's more to come.
Announcing the Take Back America Conference, a progressive policy and action summit, June 4th, 5th, and 6th in Washington, D.C. On June 4th, 5th, and 6th, over 1,000 progressive leaders and activists from across the country will gather in the nation's capital to mobilize Take Back America and proclaim a new era of progressivism. This will be the largest and most diverse gathering of prominent progressive leaders in many years, and its impact will be dramatic. This is an unprecedented effort at a critical time in our nation's history. It is essential that the progressive majority develop a strategy that will confront the real issues America is facing with initiatives that can and will make a difference. For details and to register, visit www.ourfuture.org or call 800-833-1354. That's 800-833-1354.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Tired of talk radio sounding like a propaganda arm of the Republican Party? Well, so am I. This is Peter Werbe, and I've moved my program to 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time weekdays. Join me as I expose the Grand Oil Party's plans to pay off their corporate paymasters by making this country a permanent warfare state while destroying the environment and attacking the rights of women and working people in the process. So tune by the show, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and join me, Peter Werbe, as we make plans to take back our country.
Are you worried that the road less traveled is a dead end? I feel your pain. It's not easy to be positive and happy and peaceful in a world that's so often negative and filled with war and hatred and SARS, but we can do it together. Join me, Nancy Skinner, for a radio evolution. It's Nancy Skinner's radio Vox Populi, that's Voice of the People. It's a program where people talk about the world around us and the one we want to create.
That's Nancy Skinner's radio Vox Pop, weekdays from 10 to noon Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
It's the Peter Werbe Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Yeah, gang, here I am at Seppi's at the Parker Meridian Hotel in beautiful Midtown Manhattan on this beautiful Friday afternoon. The number again is 800-825-5937. I'm here with Mark Smerling and Andrew Jarecki, the people behind Capturing the Freedmans. They captured the Freedmans, but really the Freedmans captured themselves for the most part on videotape and home movies. And, Andrew, you were telling me how Mark Friedman, the biggest clown in New York, and there are a lot of clowns in this town, the most popular clown in New York, came to tell you about these movies that the family had made of themselves.
Well, you know, at a certain point, David, it is actually David Friedman, who's this, you know, super popular children's birthday party clown in New York, had agreed to be in the film, I think, when he thought it was a film about children's birthday party clowns. But I think he knew deep down that it was obviously going to be about him, and there is a sense that perhaps this is a story that he expected to tell one day. And partly the reason we think that is because there are these incredible movies that were taken. And the way I found out about it is that, you know, we were talking to him and had learned about his story and had sort of navigated through with him the idea that we might really be telling the story and changing the movie completely to this other movie. And he finally said to us, well, if you're going to put all the other stuff in a box and make this new movie, which we were calling Movie B, we were putting all the Movie A stuff into a box, you know, I should tell you that in addition to all the hours of home videos that I gave you and home movies that my father took over the years and even my grandfather of the family during happy times, there's another 25 hours of film that I started shooting after the police showed up.
Wow. And they shot, he shot the family having the arguments, the discussions of how they're going to defend themselves against these charges. The mother was not very sympathetic. She was shocked to find out that her husband diddles little boys. I mean, she was a little upset, you might say.
Yeah, well, people say, you know, well, you know, I don't know how I feel about Elaine. If I were Elaine, I would have done this, or if I were Elaine, I would have done that. And I just have to say, you know, how could you put yourself in this woman's position? She'd been living with somebody for 30 years, and the relationship as she knew it obviously wasn't real in a way. You know, there was a relationship there. It's not as simple as that, you know, it was just a charade and it was all made up. But it was just completely different than she thought.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing to imagine, but I mean, I think everybody, you know, the interesting thing about family secrets is that not everyone in the family wants them to be a secret. And so for us, talking to somebody like Elaine was very liberating, because in the beginning, David didn't want to tell the story. And Elaine very much wanted to tell the story because she felt she wanted to be heard about it. And sometimes I think these family secrets, you know, we all have them. The Friedmans were perhaps a little bit more extreme. You know, we all take home movies. The Friedmans filmed everything. You know, they're like us, but more so, you know.
Including the night before they go to prison, which is pretty amazing if you think about it. Just having the, you know, the presence to film the night before your father's going to prison or before your brother's going to prison. It makes for some very dramatic filmmaking, which they were making themselves, so there was no presumption of being on television or anything. So it was totally raw.
Yeah.
I think if you see, you know, when you see reality television nowadays, you sort of, you know, you always have this sense that, you know, they're those guys on the desert island eating rats or something.
Right, and they know they're going to get $1 million when it's over.
Exactly. And also, you know, if you spun the camera around, you'd see that in the harbor of this deserted island, there's this armada of ships that brought all the containers with the sound equipment and all the banquets for the producers. And, you know, the reality is that when you take a look at the Friedman family in this way, in this incredibly intimate way, you realize that, you know, there's nothing that's as dramatic as real reality.
We're talking about Capturing the Friedmans, the most important movie, and I mean that, the most important movie of the season, because this talks about a family that was caught up in the mass hysteria of horrific child abuse charges, and we're going to get to how mass hysteria is generated and how they were steamrolled. They got, some might say they got bad legal advice. People end up going to prison without trials. Now, how do you go to prison without a trial? Because you don't want to fight the entire town. They say you can't fight City Hall. Well, they were fighting the entire establishment, the entire town. My name is Curtis Ellis. I'm here with Andrew Jarecki and Mark Smerling of Capturing the Friedmans. The phone number here is 800-825-5937. We're going to have more and your phone calls, so don't go away. This movie is opening nationwide, so you can catch it.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engine.
but you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
You're listening to The Peter Werby Show, 2 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
More than 1,000 workers in Canada's beef industry have been thrown out of work so far as slaughterhouses either slow down processing or close completely due to various international bans on Canadian beef imposed following the discovery of mad cow disease in the country. The Canadian government this week rejected a plea from the United Food and Commercial Workers to waive the waiting period on unemployment assistance like it did for those workers who were idle during the summer. Scare in Toronto. As of now, Canada's beef industry is losing about $20 million a day, and 16 farms in three provinces are currently under quarantine.
As Oregon state legislature slashes a range of government services in an effort to balance the budget, parents of school children in Eugene are shedding sweat and blood in an effort to save their schools, literally. After lost education revenues prevented a Eugene elementary school from replacing a retiring math teacher, more than 150 parents, teachers, and students showed up at the offices of Aventis Bioservices offering to sell their plasma to raise funds. Only about 15 volunteers qualified, and according to Aventis manager Alf Mobius, while they've raised more than any bake sale could have, they're still a long ways off from the $73,000 in wages and benefits that it costs to hire a teacher for a year.
So far, we're just rounding over $1,000 for those guys. They're becoming regulars here, and we enjoy seeing them here. And can you think of a better cost?
While the campaign has raised the profile of Oregon's education crisis, it's done little to alleviate the problem. Recently, educators throughout Portland agreed to teach for 2 weeks without pay.
Blackouts have begun in Israel as maintenance workers for the state-owned electric utility stop repairs and upgrades to the country's power grid in protest of plans to privatize their jobs. While the Israeli government has threatened to use force to compel workers to make repairs to the grid, it has not done so yet.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Steven Sack, and I host the Employees Lawyer Show on IE America Radio Network. We take calls from people all over the United States, and we help them in their job problems. So if you ever wondered what job rights you have and how to fight back, I'm the guy to call.
Listen to Steven at his new time on Sundays from 9 a.m. until noon and rebroadcast from 9 p.m. till midnight.
For more information on my show or other shows on the IE America Radio Network, go to IEAmericaRadio.com. It's the best advice I can give.
We're back. It's the Peter Werby Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Hey, gang, that number again is 1-800-825-5937, 825-5937. Broadcasting today from Seppi's at the Parker Meridian Hotel in New York City, I am joined by two New York filmmakers, Andrew Jarecki and Mark Smerling. They made the film Capturing the Freedmans, which opens in New York and Los Angeles today.
It opens just in New York today.
New York today.
And also in Great Neck, Long Island, where the film took place.
Mm-hmm. And it will be opening nationwide. It will be opening in Chicago on June 6th.
Correct.
And then it will be rolling out across the country shortly thereafter. This is a documentary about a family that gets caught up in the mass hysteria around child sex abuse allegations in the 1980s. The father, Arnold Freeman, who is an award-winning teacher, went to prison where he died. And the son, Jesse Friedman, his 19-year-old son, also was sentenced to a long prison sentence. But there was never any trial. there really was never any evidence against them. And the question arises, how can you have a situation like that? How do you have mass hysteria? Well, this was the 1980s. This was Anita Bryant was out there telling everybody that homosexuals are child molesters. You had Ed Meese as the attorney general saying child pornography is everywhere. You had milk cartons with pictures of kids on them who apparently were being shipped into child sex rings across the country at dairy farms across the Midwest, I guess. I don't know why they were on milk cartons. And there was a ripe atmosphere for this kind of hysteria. But the thing I want to mention here is, because the big story today is, besides your movie, if you'll excuse me for a minute, the big story is about media regulation. On Monday, the FCC is going to lift the ownership caps, allowing fewer companies to own more outlets. And in the case that is outlined and presented in Capturing the Freedmans, we see a situation where the commercial news media had every interest in promoting this story and creating a frenzy around this story, for which there was no evidence.
Hmm. Well, I think you have to start, you have to take it back. I mean, certainly the media was fed a lot of information by the police and the, particularly the sex crimes unit in Great Neck, Long Island. And the reality is that those people really thought they were prosecuting a just cause. And in their sort of vigor, they created a media frenzy by inviting the media along for the ride, and then that sort of like built from there. So, I mean, if you stop it at the beginning, then it never becomes really a media frenzy. So, in my point of view, I don't know if the media is as guilty as some other people would think is guilty.
Well, I think you know historically the media knows what to do with a good story, and you know you
that's
never
their job.
You know, and you know you see it on the news every day. A friend of mine calls it "No News at 11."
Right.
And you know he says, look, nothing on television works unless it's a trend or unless it could be followed with "Could your child be next?" And therefore, you know, they obviously are looking for something to be big and to be a big news story. They want tune in. You know, if you're making a movie, you put a sexy girl in it. And if you're making a news show, you got to put a sexy story in it.
Right.
So I think the idea in this case is that the ground was ready for that. It was sort of prepared for that by the police because right at the beginning of the case, let's say, the judge agreed to allow cameras in the courtroom.
And that was the first time in Long Island history.
And so, you know, you see in the film that every moment of these people's jeopardy is captured on film, whether it's the news cameras or the Freedman's own cameras. There are cameras there to record it. Then it appears in the media, and you know it's immediately broadcast as essentially as a fait accompli. They might say alleged very quietly before they say sex criminals, but you know the idea is who wants to watch a story about alleged sex criminals when you can watch a story about real sex criminals? So I think it very quickly, you know, it's sort of like what I said about the detective. He says we were given a list of alleged victims,
right.
And that's a subtle distinction, but it's an enormous distinction if you're one of the people who's accused of these crimes.
Yeah. Now, we hear in the film, we see a couple of these alleged victims, people who, on the basis of whose testimony these charges were brought. And we see one kid, who's now grown, because this happened almost 20 years ago, we see one of the kids say, well, nothing really happened.
Right. And actually, we see kids, I mean, we interviewed, you know, there were allegedly hundreds of victims of the Freedmans, and you would have to believe that these sex crimes were going on in these computer classes, which happened every day for 5 or 6 years. And so you'd imagine that there were hundreds of kids who were being violently taken advantage of, and yet every day the parents arrived, and you know they picked up their kids at the end of the hour-long or hour-and-a-half-long computer class, and everybody had their clothes in place, and the kids never complained of anything, and there was no physical evidence, and there was no way of identifying any of this. But suddenly, years later, the police start talking to the kids, and suddenly a number of kids are remembering things that they had not prior to that remembered.
You know, last night I had a conversation with somebody about what's happening in the Catholic Church right now with pedophilia. Right. And I think it's a tremendous difference in what's happening in the Catholic Church in the sense that the children are growing up and remembering things and coming forward. You got to remember, in this case, nobody ever came forward. They were searched out. They were interrogated. And then they came up with a story. So it's a very different thing. And ever since this thing happened, nobody has ever come forward. No one's ever come from out of the blue and said, you know, Arnold Freeman or Jesse Freeman molested me.
Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things about your movie, Capturing the Freedmans, is that you don't just tell a straight story. You don't say, this is what happened, what a horrible injustice was committed to these people. There's a lot more layers to it than that. I walked out of the theater, and I didn't know what to believe. I mean, I wasn't sure who did what or who didn't do what. I didn't think these people had committed any crimes. But just in one example, there's two wildly divergent stories told by the defense attorney and Jesse Freedman, the kid who went to prison for 13 years. So you know, just in that one instance, somebody wasn't telling you the truth. And that is repeated throughout the whole movie. There's just so many different versions of what happened that it really draws, it really calls into question the whole idea of there being a clear line between truth and perception.
That's right. That's why you have to see it many times.
Well, no, but I mean, what Mark is saying is actually serious. Besides, I mean, if we could get everybody to see the movie two times for the price of one, we would do it. Because the first time, you know, it's a very rich story, and you know, you don't take your eyes off the screen. It's not a talking head story where you're sort of bored by it. You're really there, and so you are called upon to become the judge and the jury in the trial that never happened. And partly because I think it's not just talking heads that you have to listen to, but actually you're put into the action because there is this incredible footage that you're party to, because you're inside the Freedman's house with them. There's a much higher feeling that you have to have an opinion at the end. You know, you feel like you can't just leave it up to whoever was the expert in the movie. You know, this movie doesn't really have experts in it, and it just has you at the end. And that's one of the reasons why you feel like you need to have an opinion, and one of the reasons why after the film, you know, Mark and I will stick around and do a sort of question and answer session, and no one leaves. Nobody goes out to their car. They stay because they have to know more, you know. One thing I would say that's very interesting is to go to the website for the film, and you'll see it's not a promotional website. It doesn't, you know, there's no, you can't win tickets or anything. It's not like that.
Oh, darn.
It's literally, you know, it's literally just a further experience with the Freedman family, and it's called CapturingTheFreedmans.com. But it's another layer, and I think people leave the film and they say, I need more of this because I need more information.
Right.
And then they really stay on the website and they listen to everyone's comments, and they sort of turn their speakers up and they really want to hear what everyone in the Freedman family and outside is talking about, even in that way.
What's on the website? More footage from the Freedman's home movies?
Yeah, yes, but it's mainly a sort of, it's kind of a family album of the Freedmans.
Gosh. With audio.
But the audio is really unique, because remember that there were so many hours of material we couldn't put in the film, including audio tapes. I mean, the Freedman boys were so mischievous that, you know, when their parents were arguing in their bedroom, they literally took one of those old-fashioned Radio Shack tape recorders, that the flat one with the little speaker on it,
yeah,
and they stuck a cassette in it, and they slipped it under the door.
Oh my!
And so, you know, there was just... And their feeling, I think, to some extent, was, this is such an insane situation that... We need, one day, we're going to need to look back on this and say, how did this happen? It was moving so fast when it happened that we couldn't really keep track of it. You know, David would say, well, the reason I filmed all this material is not, as the police would say, because I'm so unhinged from reality that I'm just like crazy and I'm filming everything, but rather because I knew my father was going to jail probably forever. And of course I wanted to film him. You know, I my kids were never going to see him. My kids were never going to know who he was. So that's another example of, you know, you look at something, you say, oh, he's crazy. And then a minute later, he explains to you why he did it. And you say, well, actually, I probably would have done the same thing.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to Andrew Jarecki, director of Capturing the Freedmans. My name is Curtis Ellis, here with Andrew and Mark Smerling, the producer of the film. Hey, gang, if you're out there and you are now being accused of child sex abuse, you might want to get out your camcorder and start recording yourself so that you can make a movie about your own situation. Because this movie is going to win the Academy Award. I predict that your film will win Best Documentary. I don't know what it's up against. But there can't be. There's no other film like this.
No, thank you very much. Yeah, that's nice. I mean, it would be. We're so happy with where it is right now. When it won at Sundance, we were sort of apoplectic. We were like, we couldn't believe it. And now that it's going into theaters, it's unbelievable, and it's very gratifying.
Yeah, and I think it's nice to know also people just, you know, they obviously watch it like a movie. They don't watch it like a lesson. You know,
right.
this is not a show on PBS that, you know, you're instructed to watch by your teacher. This is something where, you know, you turn it on. I've had so many people go and say, well, I'm just going to stay for 5 minutes because I've seen it before. And
uh-huh.
then, you know those people are going to stay and the, you know, the taxi's going to leave and they're going to need to watch it again. And we feel the same way. We stay, you know, we watch it so frequently because I think even after working on it for now 3 years, you know, we still watch some part of it, and we say, "Did you ever see that car in that shot before? What's that car doing there?" You know,
it's the same experience we had making the film, and that was the sort of experience we were trying to get into the film. Is when you have this incredible path to discovery. I mean, the entire process was something new all the time. It was a great film to make, you know, and it was an exciting process.
I think it's very funny how you started out making a film, a documentary about clowns, and end up making a film about this one family, which happens to have a clown in it, which is just caught up in this incredible, incredible situation of criminal justice system. We're talking about Capturing the Freedmans, a documentary film, an impressive film about the Freedmans, a real-life family who was accused in real life of an imaginary crime. That's all I can call it. I may be wrong. Go see the film and you form your own opinion. But these people were accused of over 100 counts of running sex orgies in the basement with all the neighborhood kids, and there was no physical evidence. And people went to prison over this. I believe this whole period of time in our history, 100 years from now, people will look back and they will say, this is a case of a society that went mad, that drove itself mad. And I'm not just talking about the Freedman case. I'm talking about an entire situation where we have a society that is being fed information, hyper-fed information, pumped up for ratings. And to me, ratings is almost synonymous with mass hysteria. We have a media that has a vested interest in getting people worked up over something, anything.
Right. A friend of mine, my friend Gavin DeBecker, who's very smart, writes about the media and violence in particular, says that, you know, in the year that, ten years ago, there were 500 incidents of people getting shot on the nation's highways by other motorists, and there were 2,000 news stories about it. 3 years later, after the phrase road rage was created, there were 420 incidents that year, so a significant drop-off, but there were 30,000 stories. and that essentially just coming up with a phrase like road rage is enough to have somebody say, all right, we're going to do a road rage story on the 3 o'clock, and you know, that guy was in the car, and it's road rage, and could you be next? It's got to finish with, could your child be next?
Right.
Could you be next? You know, it's like freak accident, smallpox infestation in small country in Africa. Could your child be next?
The deadly Ebola virus lurking under your sink? I'm speaking with Andrew Jarecki and Mark Smerling of Capturing the Freedmans. The phone number here is 800-825-5937 if you want to get in the conversation. So what kind of feedback have you been getting from audiences? Did you market research this film, audience test it, and decide, let's see, which happy ending should we give it?
No, I think our rule on the film was just be as honest as possible. And, you know, we every time we thought, it's infuriating not to have the answer yourself. And so we would see some incredible thing happen, and we'd say, well, this changes everything. And then we'd go back but whenever we thought, all right, we're getting close to the end here, you know, we've probably got to wrap it up, and maybe we now have an opinion about what happened, you know, the truth would sneak away in some interesting way, and it would sort of go down some street that we didn't expect, and then we'd have to spend another 6 months on it. And it was actually, it was very gratifying to do that, because we knew we were doing the right thing. We couldn't make it more quickly or more, more haphazardly. It had to be done in that way. It had to take 3 years to make it. And so, you know, the rule that you use to yourself when you're editing is just like, what feels right here? You know, we don't want to create a construction. We don't want to have an ending or something with pizzazz. You just want to make it real. And in the end, real is better and much more dramatic.
Mm-hmm. You also have to become comfortable with the idea that not all answers are answerable. You know, you have to be comfortable with the idea that some things we might not ever know, you know, and you're going to have to make your own stand on this issue.
Well, that's really what I took away from the film, is some things I'll never be comfortable knowing. I just don't know what really happened. Did Arnold abuse his own sons? What did Arnold do in that computer class? What got this whole thing started? Did Jesse ever do anything? Because he confessed, thinking it was going to get him off.
I want to say something about that. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot recently, and Mark and I have gotten to know the judge in this case over time. She was kind enough to let us interview her, which is very extraordinary to have a Supreme Court judge in Nassau County who's a sitting judge and knew at the time that she was being interviewed that she was not finished with this case because...
We're going to get that story on the other side here. I'm speaking with Mark Smerling and Andrew Jarecki about Capturing the Freedmans, their film, their documentary film, which opens today in New York. It's being written about everywhere. And you, too, can get in the conversation. 1-800-825-5937. We're going to hear what the judge said. Here come the judge.
How can I keep her safe when she always seems to be running away from me? It used to be so much easier to find solutions to her problems. Now, I don't even understand the questions, let alone have any answers.
The Girls and Boys Town National Hotline can help you find those answers. We've been working with teenagers for over 50 years and would like to share what we've learned about parenting. Call us toll-free, 1-800-448-3000.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
I say it's like fire.
No, I'd say blowtorch.
I describe it this way. Oh.
They're talking about the burn of indigestion and pain. How can you cool the burning fast? With Alka-Seltzer. Effervescent Alka-Seltzer is ready to go to work instantly to cool the burn of indigestion and pain fast. Alka-Seltzer, with the refreshing lemon-lime taste. Nothing cools the burn of indigestion and pain faster. Use as directed.
There's something I must tell you. I want to be free.
Oh, Helen, you want to be free with the wind in your hair, life without care?
No, I want to be free of those overnight laxatives that give me cramps.
You want Freelax, the only overnight laxative that gives you stimulant-free, cramp-free relief in just two caplets.
Oh, John, I just wish everything could be that dependable.
Freelax is the free of everything you hate about laxatives. Laxative, look for it in the bright green box. Use only as directed.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. 247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video, call Power, Performance, and Possibilities. Call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
I have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on. There. This is a commercial for a major radio network.
Wish
we can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Boy, get up, stand up, stand up for your right.
We're back. It's the Peter Werby Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Yeah, that's right, gang. Call now, 800-825-5937, or else I'm going to have the DA accuse you of sex crimes, and you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life. Not really. I'm here with Capturing the Freedmans, the director and the producer of this wonderful film, and we have on the line from Santa Fe a phone call. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Who's that?
Who's that? This is Curtis Mac? Ellis. Who's this?
This is Mac.
Hey, Mac.
From Santa Fe.
Righto. Go ahead.
I just got in from lunch and got onto the tag end of just before you went off the air. And a phrase caught my eye or my ear, and it hit me like a ton of bricks. They talked about being as honest as possible.
Well, that's what this film is. The film is Capturing the Freedmans, and this film is as honest as possible
that's
in presenting the case of this family that is accused of these horrific crimes, because the film, I wouldn't say it doesn't have a point of view. The film lets you make up your mind as to what really happened with this family. Now, I only have a couple minutes left with Andrew and Mark.
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead. Make it quick.
The thing that bugs me on this one is the phrase, as honest as possible. And it struck me that, are there degrees of honesty? I mean, why do we fool around with anything and try to be as honest as possible? In other words, we don't have all the facts, huh?
Well, let's get an answer from my guest here.
Well,
Thank you, Mac.
You know, I think it's a good question. It's very hard to have all the facts in a situation. You know, you come home and you see, something on your front lawn, and you say, "What is that?" And your wife has one version of it, and your son has another version of it. And I'm not sure if there is exactly a version of this story that is perfectly true, because it means different things to different people. And it's important, you know, for you to try to hear everybody's perspective on something like this. You find out, for example, that one of the detectives in this story immediately says to us in the film, you have to be very careful with a case like this, because you want to make sure that you're making a good charge. You could just ruin someone's life just by accusing them of this kind of a crime. And so you say, there's my narrator. She is going to be totally honest with me. I can trust this person. She's cautious. She's intelligent. She's done her homework. And 5 minutes later, she totally impeaches herself, and she says something that's completely untrue.
Unbelievable. Well, thank you so much. I've been speaking with Mark Smerling and Andrew Jarecki. That was Andrew you just heard talking. He's the director of Capturing the Freedmans. Mark Smerling is the producer of Capturing the Freedmans. He also shot the film as well. This is an important film, a documentary film, and it's opening in New York today. It's opening nationwide. You can read about it in The New Yorker. You can read about it everywhere. You can read about it at IEAmericaRadio.com. My name is Curtis Ellis. I'll be back with more, so don't go away and give us a call, 800-825-5937. Thank you.
listening to The Peter Werby Show on the IE America Radio Network. Copyright 2003.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal.
Anaconda. Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Erica Kane. A warning has been issued for Americans to avoid travel to Israel, the Gaza Strip, and the West Bank after officials say they had credible reports of possible plans to kidnap U.S. citizens. U.S. citizens in the region are being advised to consider relocating to a safe location. President Bush has left for a multinational tour, which includes stops in Poland, Russia, France, and the Middle East. Diplomats on both sides are curious about how the president will relate to his fellow European leaders, as Priscilla Huff reports.
Vive la France. President Bush has managed to find common ground and begin to patch up the relations with France, badly fractured over the Iraq War. The ongoing food and humanitarian crises in Africa is helping to get the U.S. and France working together again. But that's not necessarily true of Germany. At the Group of Eight summit, all eyes will be on how Mr. Bush handles German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder, whether he gives a warm handshake or the cold shoulder. Then again, U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell's favorite metaphor for U.S.-European relations is that it's a marriage that's been in counseling for more than 200 years. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
A spokeswoman for Lacey Peterson's mother is ripping the sensational release of the autopsy results of Lacey Peterson and her unborn son. Kim Peterson was on NBC's Today Show.
Those documents were sealed by the judge, and the district attorney's office at the appropriate time would have sat down with the family before it was released to the nation. It was incredibly insensitive, incredibly irresponsible of whoever leaked this information.
Lacey Peterson and her unborn son were found dead on the shores of the San Francisco Bay after she went missing Christmas Eve. Her husband, Scott, is facing trial for double murder in the deaths. Peterson said the family should have been informed about the autopsy results privately before they were released to the public. More in a moment.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness, kidney disease. They all can be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know if you have it. But what makes diabetes so scary? Many people don't know when they have it because there are often no symptoms. Meanwhile, diabetes can be causing damage that will lead to serious problems later on. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk for diabetes. What should you do? See your doctor. Because a simple blood test can detect the problem. And with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. For more information, call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. That's 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Consumer spending dropped slightly last month by 0.1%. That follows an upwardly revised 0.8% gain in March. The new report from the Commerce Department also indicated that personal income was unchanged in April. That marks the first time since July of 2002 that incomes have not posted a monthly gain. The latest numbers renew concerns that consumer spending may be waning and a severe slide in economic activity could follow. More after this.
John, there's something. something I must tell you. I want to be free.
Oh, Helen, you want to be free with the wind in your hair, life without care?
No, I want to be free of those overnight laxatives that give me cramps.
You want Freelax, the only overnight laxative that gives you stimulant-free, cramp-free relief in just two caplets.
Oh, John, I just wish everything could be that dependable.
Freelax is the free of everything you hate about laxatives. Laxative, look for it in the bright green box. Use only as directed.
The nine men plucked from the Kew Creek mine in Pennsylvania last summer are using their unlikely fame to help the nation's mining families make ends meet.
Since last summer's rescue, the Kew Creek Nine and community leaders have been looking for a way to use the exposure of their rescue as a way to support miners and their families across the country. Yesterday, they announced the creation of the Miracle Miners Community Foundation. It's a nonprofit group designed to help mining families with health and educational expenses. The group is already planning its first fundraiser. A three-day festival this July to commemorate the first anniversary of the rescue takes place July 25th to the 27th at Winbur Stadium in Somerset County, featuring concerts and other attractions. More information is available at a website at miracleminer.org. I'm Jim Loke reporting.
Leading weather experts are altering predictions on the 2003 hurricane season to include a greater number of storms. The team from Colorado State University estimates there will be 14 named storms this year, with 8 becoming hurricanes. I'm Erica Kane, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. You're all dressed up with places to go. You scoot behind the wheel, turn the key, but no go. Now you're just all dressed up. What's to blame? Battery or starter? When I come back, I'll tell you.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
When cars won't start, it's always frustrating. What's the culprit, battery or starter? Here's how to tell. If it's night, turn on your headlights. If they don't come on, of course it's the battery. But if they do, leave them on and try to crank your car. If they dim or go out, the battery's to blame. During daylight, try the same test with your horn. If your lights and horn operate normally when you try to crank your car, guess what? It's the starter. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome to the Peter Werby Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Hey, gang, I'm here with you for the next little while here. A lovely show today on a lovely day in New York City where I'm broadcasting from. Right now I'm sitting at Seppi's, a great restaurant at the Parker Meridian Hotel on West 57th Street. And the phone number here is 800-825-5937, 1-800-825-5937. And I am taking your calls, so call in now. We'll get you right on. Maybe you have noticed, finally now, in the last few days, the mass media, or the mass hysterical media, has started to pay attention to the fact that the FCC is about to change the rules of the game. Now, I've been talking about this here, and you've heard the other people on the IE America Radio Network talking about this issue for months now. The fact is the FCC wants to remove the restrictions on how much one company can own in the way of media properties. So we could have one company own the television station, all the radio stations, and the newspaper in a given city. Or you could have one company own TV stations across the country, which reach nearly half of the population of the U.S. All of this would be allowed under the new FCC regulations. This, of course, would change the ground rules of media. It would change the ground rules and the reality of democracy in America. And for that reason, I've been trying to draw attention to it, as have the other hosts on this network. I was talking to Norman Lear about it back in November, saying we've got to do something about this. And I could not get any takers on the story. I called NPR. I called, because I'm a freelance reporter as well, tried to interest them in the story. Nobody wanted to hear about it. Well, now, in the last week, Ted Koppel did something on it. William Sapphire wrote a column about it in the New York Times. There was a full-page ad in the New York Times. Finally now, there's starting to be some attention. Why? Because the FCC rules on Monday. It's too late to do anything about it. If they had told us about this months ago, there was a public comment period that everybody could have said something, could have written the FCC and called them. Ay, ay, ay. Joe in Brookings, Oregon, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, well, speaking of the media, specifically in this case, the so-called respectable conservative media like National Review Magazine, I mentioned them because I was just down at our local library and somebody left some issues of a National Review. And I refer you to the April 7th issue, National Review Magazine, where they have a big article in there. And they go after conservatives like Pat Buchanan and Robert Novak, and the front page says, unpatriotic conservatives.
Unpatriotic conservatives. Oh my God! What did these people do?
Oh well, as you can imagine, they had some critical things to say about Bush's war in Iraq.
Oh, I see. That's right. If you criticize Bush, you are unpatriotic. If you're not sufficiently enthralled with our president, it means you hate this country.
That's right. That's right. That's exactly what the whole article is all about. And they mention the fact that the conservatives like Pat Buchanan and Robert Novak, said some approving things about some articles written by the likes of Alexander Coburn and Ted Rowell and all these unpatriotic scumbags from the left wing. And, oh, my God, what are these conservatives doing? Of course, when Pat Buchanan, in the past, when he had things to say that were anti-woman or anti-gay or anti-Jewish or, whatever the hell his problem was. Well, they didn't have a problem with that when Pat Buchanan came out against the Persian Gulf War. He became one of the enemies of these right-wing rags like National Review Magazine. That's
right.
What were you going to say?
I think it's just amazing how these so-called conservatives, which aren't conservatives at all, they're radicals, but how people who are supposed to believe in American principles, one of which is freedom of speech, demand a conformity of opinion. I thought that free speech meant you had a diversity of opinion. You had antagonistic opinions. You had people freely discussing things, disagreeing violently with each other, and that is what indicates the health of our society. The more disagreement there is, the healthier our society is. But that's not the way people see it anymore. Now they think if there's disagreement, there's something wrong. We all must be agreeing. We all must be uniform. There must be a conformity of opinion. Otherwise, you're unpatriotic, you're against America, you're not with the program.
That's right. That's right. I think that's one of the reasons why the Crossfire program got knocked down to half an hour. I believe Robert Novak is an Arab American himself, and of course, Robert Novak, believe it or not, he's the one guy on television that actually makes sense when he talks about the Middle East. I mean, the guy's actually reasonable on Middle Eastern issues. Of course, he's a total a-hole when it comes to everything else.
That's funny. I never tuned into him on the Middle East topic, so I hadn't caught that. So there's actually one subject that Robert Novak is reasonable on.
That's right.
Interesting.
That was probably one reason why they thought about canceling Crossfire.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. Now, what have you noticed that just in the last week, the major media has started paying attention or at least acknowledging the fact that the FCC is about to rewrite the rules of the game? CNN today had a story about how the FCC is going to rule on Monday to lift the ownership restrictions.
Yeah, they've just gotten around to talking about it just a little bit. But just like you said, it's way too late. It's probably fait accompli. That what you got six major companies running the media these days is what's going to go down to like 4 or 3.
Right.
And so some of these guys are now worried because you know they believe and probably rightfully so some of them are going to be losing their jobs.
That's right, and they very well could. Yeah. Well, Joe, thank you for calling. It's always a pleasure to talk with you. I hope you have a great weekend. And as we're talking about the media and the concentration of media, maybe you didn't know, there's something I learned this week, which is that Bravo, the cable channel, is actually owned by NBC. So one of the reasons given for lifting the ownership restrictions on the major media, on all media, is the fact that there is now this great diversity. We've got 500 cable channels, and we've got the internet with 20 zillion websites, which all have nude pictures of Demi Moore on them. The fact of the matter is a lot of these cable channels and a lot of these outlets are owned by the same companies. But that does not stop them from coming up with great programming. Yes, there is a whole new raft of reality TV shows that are coming out, be coming on this summer. NBC's got American Princess, where women will get a Cinderella-style transformation, so they go from everyday life to mingling with British high society in a few exciting weeks. Yeah, now that's not good enough for you. There's also American Junior, which has kids from the ages of 6 to 13 doing an American Idol kind of thing, so they can become the new performing sensation. Sounds like Gypsy, or a subplot in Gypsy. Then there's Average Joe, which is kind of like Joe Millionaire, only the other way around. A beauty queen shacks up in some apartment house in Southern California, and then she gets to pick her boyfriend from 16 guys. Now, she thinks she's going to get 16 handsome men, but no, she gets 16 nerds and geeks. So nobody can tell me that the major media is not giving us great mind-stimulating fare here. But now, it's not. Now, most of these reality shows, you know, do feature good-looking women, swimsuit models that are stuck on a desert island as to be a survivor or some such thing. Or there's Monica Lewinsky has got a woman who's got to pick a boyfriend from guys wearing leather masks. I don't know. But there is one show now that is coming out that is geared towards the gay audience. It's called Boy Meets Boy. And it's been billed in some of the news accounts as kind of a gay dating show where the lucky bachelor, the leading man, has to pick a date. And there are 15 guys or 16 guys or 10 guys or there's a number of guys that he will have to pick to go out on a dream date with. It's sort of like the dating game. I've got with me right now the producer of this show, Douglas Ross, who's been nice enough to join me on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Douglas, are you there?
I'm here, and how you doing?
Oh, good. How are you today?
Doing very well.
I saw you going on with Joe Scarborough last night, that weirdo on MSNBC, who just couldn't seem to get over the Jenny Jones aspect of your show. But,
well, there's no Jenny Jones aspect to our show.
I know. That
really
guy's brain dead. That guy's brain dead. I'm sorry I even mentioned his name. So what we got here is you've got the lucky bachelor who then has to pick among the eligible males to go on a date, right?
That's right.
But then there's a twist. And what is that?
We have a twist in the show. We have our leading man, who is a very eligible and handsome and smart and quite a catch guy. He's gay, and he's picking between 15 suitors. We call them the mates. But what he doesn't know is that some of the mates that he's choosing from are actually straight guys. straight guys that we've issued a challenge to see if they can pull off a role reversal where it's actually the straight guys in the closet in an all-gay world.
So if the gay leading man picks one of the straight guys for his dream date, the straight guy wins money, right?
That's right. There's a small cash incentive for the straight guys to come on and take on the challenge. But I think that for all of the straight guys who participated in the show, they were doing it also for the sociological experiment. They really did want to see what it's like to walk a mile in a gay man's shoes.
Well, what you're doing, Douglas, is you are paying straight men to act gay.
Well, we're not paying them. Nobody gets paid unless they get chosen.
Well, that's it. If they act gay enough to fool this guy, they can walk away with some cash.
Well, that's the prize. That's the game show element of it all, indeed.
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but I think it's pretty clever. You've gone out and you trolled the waters of the nation asking, are there any straight guys out there who are ready to win cash and prizes by acting gay and fooling somebody? I'm going to get your reaction in a minute here. The phone number is 800-825-5937. My name is Curtis Ellis. I'm here with Douglas Ross, the producer of Boy Meets Boy, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
What magazine was the late Senator Paul Wellstone talking about when he said, at a time of growing media concentration, this magazine is an invaluable source of news and information that corporate media would too often prefer to ignore? He was talking about In These Times, a bi-weekly magazine of news, politics, and culture. In These Times has won more Project Censored awards than any other magazine. For 27 years, In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of the labor movement, feminism, grassroots politics, and minority communities. If getting a perspective other than what's in the mainstream media is important to you, In These Times is essential reading. In the words of best-selling author Barbara Ehrenreich, to people who say they're sick and tired of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated news media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Do it now and find out what you're missing. Look for In These Times in bookstores near you or visit them on the web at www.inthesetimes.com. That's www.inthesetimes.com.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. 247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video, call Power, Performance, and Possibilities. Call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Our scientists have studied and found that our listeners have a lot of stress from the lack of being able to get their questions and comments off of their minds, which can cause nausea, vomiting, and eventually will make you strip down, sit in a corner, and drool while counting pretty yellow and pink elephants flying around.
Okay.
So now, IE America Radio Network is proud to present the IE Hotline. Call and give your comments.
I just wanted to call and let you know your internet station totally rocks off the chart.
Your suggestions.
I think Doug Steffen should be on all day, 24-7. Yeah.
Your questions.
Got a question about Bush. How the hell do you put food on your family? What is that?
Crop growth and biologic growth are by the good will and volitional control.
Or whatever the heck that just was. So call 1-800-397-8255 and leave a message for any one of our on-air talents. 1-800-397-8255. Operators are standing by. Just kidding. You have to leave a message.
It's the Peter Werby Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Yeah, start me up right now. 800-825-5937 is the phone number here. I'm talking with Douglas Ross, the man who's going to pay straight men to act gay on his show, Boy Meets Boy. That's my own silly way of looking at your show, which is it sounds like a little bit of fun. You're trying to get these guys. Yeah, now these guys are gonna if they can fool your eligible bachelor's gay radar and pass themselves off as gay, they will actually walk away with cash, won't they?
That's right. If a gentleman actually makes it all the way to the end and is chosen as the final selection from our leading man, then indeed he would walk away with the cash.
Now, how did you find your contestants? My first question: does size matter?
Size always matters, of course. And we were looking for well-built, handsome gentlemen who had great personalities. And there were many out there. We cast the gay contestants separately from the straight contestants. We went to straight guys and told them that they would be trying out for a reality game show. And once they passed several litmus tests that indicated to us that they might be good candidates to take on the challenge, we told them what the twist would be. And so the straight guys knew exactly, of course, what they were getting into and wanted to do it. Many of the straight guys have important people in their lives who happen to be gay, whether it's their parents, their relatives, co-workers, college buddies. And for all of them, it was more than just the challenge and going for the financial reward at the end. They really wanted to see what it was like to be in the closet.
What it was like to be cruised by another man. Now, how'd you come up with the name? How'd you come up with the idea and the name? Did you think, like, maybe I should call this Find the Queer or what? I mean, how did you come up with this idea? How do people come up with these crazy reality show ideas?
Well, I admit that it is a wild idea. When Bravo and NBC came to us and said, let's explore doing a gay-themed dating show, we sat around and kicked around a bunch of different variations on that idea. And the one that they sparked to, of course, was this one, the one where some of the contestants would actually be straight, and that was the twist. I think in today's current television climate, the audience is expecting and, in fact, demanding twists and turns. They want to go on the roller coaster ride that the contestants go on in the show. But I do have to tell you that all of our contestants, even the gay contestants, knew that it was a game show, that indeed they were only going to be there for 8 days making a television project, and we told them there would be a lot of twists, turns, and surprises.
Now, are you going to do a follow-up to this, Girl Meets Girl?
I've thought about it.
Yeah, I think you might get a bigger audience for that. Even straight guys would want to watch that one.
Well, one of the reasons we put straight guys into this show was to broaden out the potential audience. We felt that if we were doing just a standard gay dating show, that we would for sure attract a gay audience. But we thought by adding in this twist, we stand a better chance of attracting a larger straight audience as well. And really, we very much wanted to see if we couldn't break down stereotypes and preconceived notions about what it means to be gay and straight in our culture.
Right. Now, I think that you're going to get a huge audience out there in the West Village and in all the gay communities. Everybody's going to be tuning in, trying to see if they can figure out which one of these guys is straight and which one's gay. They're going to be playing along with the eligible bachelor.
Definitely.
So that's really that's really the gimmick of the show. I mean, it's find the Ethiopian in the fuel supply.
We fully anticipate that the audience will be playing along, and I can imagine after an episode airs, the next day at the office, people standing around the water cooler debating over who's straight and who's gay, and I hope that happens.
All right. Well, Douglas Ross, thank you very much for joining me on this Friday afternoon. Go catch your plane. Hope you have a wonderful weekend in
thank
your
you.
Beautiful hometown of Denver. And, oops, I hope I didn't give anything away there.
That's okay. That's where I'm from.
Good. My name is Curtis Ellis. We're going to be taking your calls after the news here. 800-825-5937. More to come.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H cooling gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
You're listening to The Peter Werby Show, 2 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
More than 1,000 workers in Canada's beef industry have been thrown out of work so far as slaughterhouses either slow down processing or close completely due to various international bans on Canadian beef imposed following the discovery of mad cow disease in the country. The Canadian government this week rejected a plea from the United Food and Commercial Workers to waive the waiting period on unemployment assistance like it did for those workers who were idled during the SARS scare in Toronto. As of now, Canada's beef industry is losing about $20 million a day, and 16 farms in three provinces are currently under quarantine.
As Oregon's state legislature slashes a range of government services in an effort to balance the budget, parents of schoolchildren in Eugene are shedding sweat and blood in an effort to save their schools, literally. After lost education revenues prevented a Eugene elementary school from replacing a retiring math teacher, more than 150 parents, teachers, and students showed up at the offices of Aventis Bioservices offering to sell their plasma to raise funds. Only about 15 volunteers qualified, and according to Aventis manager Alf Mobius, while they've raised more than any bake sale could have, they're still a long ways off from the $73,000 in wages and benefits that it costs to hire a teacher for a year.
So far, we're just rounding over $1,000 for those guys. They're becoming regulars here, and we enjoy seeing them here. And can you think of a better cause?
While the campaign has raised the profile of Oregon's education crisis, it's done little to alleviate the problem. Recently, educators throughout Portland agreed to teach for 2 weeks without pay.
Blackouts have begun in Israel as maintenance workers for the state-owned electric utility stop repairs and upgrades to the country's power grid in protest of plans to privatize their jobs. While the Israeli government has threatened to use force to compel workers to make repairs to the grid, it has not done so yet.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal
Narwhal.
Talk. We talk Australia. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Ostrich.
Penguin.
Whale.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bat.
Zebra.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
We're back. It's
The Peter Werby Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Hey, gang. I'm here with you at Seppi's, the restaurant at the Parker Meridian Hotel on West 57th Street in beautiful Midtown Manhattan, just to the left of Carnegie Hall. So come on down. Join me, 1-800-825-5937. It's a lovely Friday afternoon here in New York City. I hope it's beautiful where you are. Everybody's outside today. They're all sitting on the sidewalk. So talking about media, talking about whatever you want to talk about. 800-825-5937. I can't get too worked up on this Friday afternoon unless you get me worked up, so call in. I'm sorry, who is that in Georgia? David, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. To the listeners out there, I call every now and then. I'm a conservative.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear conservatives.
But
I am. I'm serious.
Yeah, but the reason the reason I'm calling you today is to tell you that looking at the opposition and their message. The Republicans are on a slow march to 60 Republicans in the House of the Senate.
And why do you think so?
Well, because look at the opposition. You have Bush proposing tax cuts and the Democrats proposing smaller tax cuts. You have Bush going to war. He's a popular president, and I believe that this election, this presidential election, is going to have coattails. There is you have Gephardt saying that he's going to repeal the Bush tax cut, and basically, the message is not getting out as it should, and you have a popular president, and Republicans, I feel, ever since Bill Clinton was elected, since Newt Gingrich, the Republicans, if you notice, have been making gains, except for one off
right.
the election.
Yeah, stay with me, David. I'm glad you called. I'm afraid I have to agree with you. You've got the president proposing tax cuts, and the Democrats proposing smaller tax cuts. They are not presenting any clear ideas of their own. They are not presenting a clear opposition. In fact, I was talking last night with Senator Schumer. Chuck Schumer is the New York senator from the state of New York to the federal senator. He's on the Judiciary Committee. He is leading the filibuster and leading the opposition to some of President Bush's more extreme and radical judicial nominees. And I asked him, I said, what do you think of a Democratic Party that could not oppose this tax cut bill? I mean, here you've got the government in deficit, running hundreds of billions of dollars of deficits, and the president says, well, let's cut some more taxes, when there is no evidence whatsoever that this tax cut is going to increase prosperity in America.
Well,
somebody like the hold on, I'll let you talk. Hold on one second. The Democrats should have said, you can have the tax cut or you can have Social Security. You can have the tax cut or you can have environmental protection. You can have clean air, clean water. You can have the tax cut or you can have hospitals for veterans. But they didn't say anything like that. They just said, you can have that tax cut, or you can have our tax cut.
Well, you got to look at Kennedy cut taxes, revenues increased. Reagan cut taxes, revenue increased, but spending didn't go down. But the problem that you liberal Democrats have, what is the face of the Democratic Party? Tom Daschle. And just you just brought up the filibuster. Does that look good? No. The first time in our history we have this is going against the Constitution, advise and consent.
So no, that's not going against, David, that is not going against the Constitution.
Well, let me
tell you how it is. The Constitution says advise and consent. It doesn't mean consent and consent. It says by advise and consent, it means the president should ask the Senate for its advice. And if he doesn't ask the Senate for advice ahead of time, he's going to get it afterwards. And he's getting that advice right now. In fact, he got the advice last term when they said, we don't want Pickering. He took that advice, he threw it out the window, and he sent Pickering back for another round.
But the problem is they have the simple majority vote to confirm these judges. You need a supermajority to break a filibuster. It's just a parliamentary rule.
The Senate is allowed to set its own rules. That's right in the Constitution. The Senate can set its rules. In fact, one out of four, historically, in the early days of this republic, one out of four of the presidential's judicial nominees were not approved. He lost 25% of them, and Bush ain't doing that bad. He's getting more than he's getting far more than 75% of his nominees approved. So he really doesn't have much to complain about in that department.
But what I'm trying, my main point is, this doesn't look good. No matter how.
Well, actually, you know, I asked Schumer about that, and Chuck Schumer, who obviously has a dog in this fight, and he's got his own point of view, and he's not an unbiased observer. He says when the filibuster started out, it looked politically risky, but now it's starting to look politically right. And I know that for Democrats, for real Democrats, they want the senators to hold the line on some of these radical judicial appointments. These people are not conservatives. They're radicals. They want to get rid of the New Deal. They want to get rid of all the federal programs. They want to get rid of the federal government's power to even regulate business. That's not conservative. That's radical. And
but you know,
Democrats want somebody to stop this from happening.
But you know what? I hate to tell you this. Since 9/11... since this war in Iraq, since that we're under attack and we're at war with terrorism, this country has snapped hard to the right. And that could happen overnight if we're attacked again. To go left, it's like cancer. It's slow. It's progressive. You have to ease over to the left to a socialistic utopia that Hillary Clinton would want. But what I'm trying to tell you is the Democratic Party, y'all in the world of hurt. Y'all are in a creek, and you have no paddle.
I'm afraid I have to agree with you, David. I think the Democratic Party is brain dead. That's the question I had for Dan Glickman. I saw him last night. I was at this event, the Partnership for Public Service, which is a charity which is trying to draw the talented people into public service. It wants. Because this is probably something that the radical right is happy about. The fact of the matter is a lot of the most talented people in government are getting up near retirement age. And
you know what?
There aren't going to be enough people in government to do all of government's functions. And so this group is trying to get more people into ask not what you can, what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, that kind of idea. And
yeah,
so I saw Dan Glickman there, and I said to Dan Glickman, who used to be Secretary of Agriculture under Clinton, I said, when are we going to declare the Democratic Party brain dead?
The saddest point of your party is unfortunate death of Paul Wellstone. Who did they have to run up against? Coleman?
They had Walter Mondale. I know.
Mondale? Come on. And that whole debacle with the memorial service of Wellstone, it was a disaster.
Well, it sure was, and they got Norm Coleman. I mean, I'll tell you.
And the problem with that is Democrats, they're not over the 2000 election. They're not even over the caucus debacle. And you're looking at a president who may win California.
You think so, huh?
I don't know where this party is going to go, but I'm happy because more tax cuts for people who pay taxes, get this government to stop spending beyond its means and have a strong, muscular defense. And the message of Howard Dean,
David, I got a question for you.
What?
How much money did you get out of this last tax cut? And not the one that just got passed because you haven't seen anything from it yet, but how much money did you get from this last tax cut?
About $600.
About $600, okay. How much money are you going to get from the fact that you don't have to pay taxes on the dividends that you get from all of your stocks? How much is that going to be worth to you?
I have to look at my 401k. I couldn't tell you right off.
Well, you don't pay taxes on the 401k already, so that's not going to be
any different. It's buying stocks. I haven't really studied my 401k plan. I should, but you know how it is. I'm working. But basically, the Democratic Party, what is the message? It is big government raising taxes.
And I got another question. Yeah, I got another question for you now, David. George Bush likes to say that money in Washington isn't the government's money, it's the people's money. And that's why he wants to cut taxes and give all the money back to the people. I got two questions out of that. Number one is, why shouldn't they just cut all the taxes completely, zero taxes? If it's the people's money, why should there be any taxes at all?
Well, what I'm starting to lean towards is a consumption tax. to get rid of the IRS.
Oh, a sales tax. You just want a sales tax.
A federal sales tax and do away with the IRS because you have an entity there that has lost billions and billions of dollars of money and fraud, and they don't even know where it is.
Right.
That would get rid of. Do you know how much money people have to pay H&R Block every tax season? How much money? I had to pay $220 to H&R Block to do my taxes.
Oh, that's you should go to my account. I only had to pay him $50. I paid my guy $50, and so you should maybe see my guy.
Yeah, maybe I should.
come up to Bensonhurst in Brooklyn.
I know you got to cut me loose.
I don't have to cut you loose because I have another question for you. See, the thing that and this is another example of how the Democrats are brain dead. Because every time Bush says it's not the government's money, it's the people's money. All that money in Washington D.C. is not the government's money. It's the people's money. My answer to that is, it's the people's government. We elected the government, and we decide the government's going to spend money on these programs so that there will be school lunches, so that there will be environmental protection, so that there will be medical benefits for the veterans. So that's the answer to that question. No, we don't need to cut taxes. In fact, there's nothing wrong with taxing those people who are making millions and millions and millions of dollars off of the American system. Because that bullet in that M16 wielded by that soldier is protecting my $20,000 trailer in Mississippi as much as it's protecting that $10 million estate in Memphis, Tennessee. So that 10 millionaire ought to spend and send more money to Washington than me, who's spending $20,000. Earning $20,000.
I'm not saying that there shouldn't be any taxes, but this is a great point that I want to make to you. The Republicans were in this same predicament when Bill Clinton was first elected. Do you recall?
Yes.
The Republicans did not have the House, they did not have the Senate, and they didn't have the White House. Leadership, a vision, contract with America, of staying with core values and not being wishy-washy. If you want,
you are right, David. I agree with you. You are 100% right. You know, I don't think you're really conservative. I think you're playing this role to make very good points, and I could not agree with you more.
Do you listen to Mike Malloy?
Sure, I do.
I'm the caller that calls every now and then to Mike Malloy, and he eats my lunch sometimes, and sometimes I get him when he lets me say a word in edgewise. But I am a flying monkey right-wing conservative, all right? That's who I am, and I love being like this. And your party, where are the people in your party of vision? Like you said, they're not brain dead. They have no vision, and they keep going back to the same old playbook. No new ideas. It's a tax cut for the rich. You're going to starve old people. You're going to give me something positive. Give me something uplifting, and perhaps you'll get out of this malaise that the Democratic finds themselves in. But they won't take that.
That's right. The Democratic Party has got to come out with some bold programs. They got to come out with some bold ideas. I said this on CNN. I said the Democratic Party has got to tell the American people where it's at. The middle class did not just happen. It was created by government programs. You get your cheap mortgage from the FHA. Your parents got their college education thanks to the GI Bill. That's what created the middle class. And if you're driving on a highway, or you're going to a community college in Tennessee or New Mexico, that was paid for with taxpayer dollars from New York and New Jersey. Redistributed wealth. The people who make more money pay more taxes, and that money is sent to irrigate farmland in Utah and Colorado. Then those Republican farmers, those people farming the irrigated land in Colorado, decide they are rugged individualists and they're going to be Republicans. Because nobody ever explained to them that their livelihood is based on democratic redistribution of wealth.
Well, all I have to say is why I despise the Democratic Party is what you're just saying right here. They don't believe in people. Government does have its place, but that's why you're losing.
What do you mean we don't believe in people? What do you mean? What do you mean I don't believe in people? I believe in people.
The strength of the Democratic Party lies in its constituents' weakness. You can't, you don't know how. When President Bill Clinton said we could give you a tax cut, but you might not spend it right, unquote. It took me a month to settle down from that statement. I was really ticked off that any politician would tell me that I don't know how to spend my own money. People, we the people, believe in the people. Government has its place. Government does have its place, and it should be for the common defense, the roads, and there's taxes for that.
But, David, we're allegedly live in a democracy. This government is elected by us. It's a representative government. This government didn't come from Mars. This isn't the government of King George in England. This is a government which we elect, which does the bidding of us. At least it's supposed to. Of course, under this administration, it's the government that does the bidding of large corporations. And that's what's given it such a bad name. But when George Bush gets up there and says, it's the people's money, not the government's money, excuse me, it's the people's government. So, if I want my government to take some of this money and spend it in certain ways, there's nothing undemocratic about that. In fact, that's very democratic. It doesn't mean I don't believe in people. It means I trust and believe very much in people. And the people have spoken and said they want their government to do this and that for everyone. Right now, we have a government that only does for the rich and powerful.
Well, let me tell you this right here, okay? Understand this. Government doesn't take $100 and risk it on the stock market or risk it in risk capital to buy new trucks for your company or buy a new facility for your company and hoping that you can make a bigger and better widget. Government doesn't risk that. The people do that. The people generate wealth, and the government takes away from that wealth in the form of taxes and, like you say, redistribute it. But government... the only thing government ever did well was deliver the mail.
All right. Well, David, it's always a pleasure. It's great hearing from you. It's nice arguing with you. It's I believe in free speech and free argument. And 1-800-825-5937 is the number to call now to argue. We'll be getting to your calls right on the other side here.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express lawsuit funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
When I was 12, my father was killed in an industrial accident at a
vacant lot
where he worked. My mother insisted I stay in
the highway on-ramp
to get an education. So she took a job waiting tables at a
parking garage
to support us. She worked double shifts. And on her break, she would pick me up from
the highway on-ramp
and drop me off at the big
office building.
And I'd spend hours and hours just reading books. I remember every Saturday we'd have breakfast at the
parking garage.
And I'd tell her what I had read. And her eyes would just light up. Because she knew I'd end up in college, not working at the
vacant lot
like my dad.
When we lose a historic place, we lose a part of who we are. To learn how you can help protect places in your community, visit nationaltrust.org. History is in our hands. A message brought to you by the National Trust for Historic Preservation and the Ad Council.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit? Bad credit? No credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Xie xie is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Fan ji la is like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Fan ji la.
You know everything.
Xie xie.
I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need is a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Chris from New Mexico. Welcome to Animal Talk. What's up?
I have a neighbor decided to release 12 piranha into a river up here in northern New Mexico. But I'm wondering, I think that's a crime, isn't it?
It's not a crime, but it's a dumb idea.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You don't want the fish cops coming after you. Let me know. Yeah. No.
But, I mean, could South American piranha survive?
Not in northern New Mexico. And as soon as he dumped the fish in there, they went into shock. They were dead. Now, there are people who have released piranha in Florida, and they are in the canals. They are actually breeding and growing, and Florida is turning into the piranha state.
But would you blame me if I don't go wading for a little while?
Don't worry about it. The only problem is that if you go wading, wear waders, because if not, your lucky charms are not going to be the same size they were when you get out of the water.
Thank you for the visual. And, I'll talk to you later.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
We're back. It's the Peter Werby Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Hey, gang. We got a few minutes left to the top of the hour here. 800-825-5937. My name's Curtis Ellis, and your name is Gizmo. Gizmo in Indianapolis. How you doing? You're on a cell phone.
Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here with you.
Hey, listen, that flying monkey you had on there, you know, I had to go out and buy Sirius Radio just to get away from the likes of him so I would never have to listen to conservative talk like that again. He has no conception at all of the fact that the wealthy started the whole idea of wealth redistribution and that they've been redistributing wealth toward the top for many years by buying politicians, buying laws, and putting all their money where it's going to redistribute. Yeah, we got CEOs out there that are earning 600 times that their employees. I wonder if he's familiar even with the fundamental orders. Do you know what that is, Curtis?
The fundamental orders, no.
The
My God, it sounds
orders,
like...
It's the, in U.S. history, the basic law of the Connecticut colony, 1639 through 62.
Right.
I'm reading this to you, of course. A preamble and 11 orders presented a binding compact frame of government that put the welfare of the community above that of individuals. And for many, many years, the wealthy, the few, have been putting their welfare ahead of the many. Now, you need to explain that to that idiot right-winger that keeps coming up. He's so brainwashed by Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity. You need to let him know that this America is about the have-nots. It's not about the have.
That's right. It's always supposed to have been about everybody. This is a chance for the small guy to have a decent life. That's why people left those countries over there and the rest of the world and came here. And they weren't afraid to institute laws to protect the common good. I had to agree with David, though. The Democratic Party has been doing a crappy job of explaining that to people. The reason that Republicans and the right-wing radicals are eating our lunch is because nobody is explaining these things. I didn't even know what the fundamental laws was. Thank God there's a gizmo out there with a telephone and a copy of the fundamental laws. But why?
I think it was the fundamental orders there, Curtis.
Yeah, the fundamental orders. Well, Gizmo, it's great to hear you, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend. You're a truck driver. Yes,
okay,
we just
for
got
having me on your program. I'm going to hang up and let you have the rest of the show.
Okay. Now, TJ in Texas, we'll be coming to you on the other side here. Our phone number is 800-825-5937. My name's Curtis Ellis, sitting in for Peter Werby today, and I want to hear from you. We got a lot more coming up, so don't go away.
Listening to the Peter Werby Show on the IE America Radio Network. Copyright 2003.
Hi, Truth Seekers. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive, political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice.
I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Erica Kane. A warning has been issued for Americans to avoid travel to Israel, the Gaza Strip, and the West Bank after officials say they had credible reports of possible plans to kidnap U.S. citizens. U.S. citizens in the region are being advised to consider relocating to a safe location. President Bush has left for a multinational tour, which includes stops in Poland, Russia, France, and the Middle East. Diplomats on both sides are curious about how the president will relate to his fellow European leaders, as Priscilla Huff reports.
Vive la France. President Bush has managed to find common ground and begin to patch up the relations with France, badly fractured over the Iraq War. The ongoing food and humanitarian crises in Africa is helping to get the U.S. and France working together again, but that's not necessarily true of Germany. At the Group of Eight summit, all eyes will be on how Mr. Bush handles German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder, whether he gives a warm handshake or the cold shoulder. Then again, U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell's favorite metaphor for U.S.-European relations is that it's a marriage that's been in counseling for more than 200 years. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
A spokeswoman for Lacey Peterson's mother is ripping the sensational release of the autopsy results of Lacey Peterson and her unborn son. Kim Peterson was on NBC's Today Show.
Those documents were sealed by the judge, and the district attorney's office at the appropriate time would have sat down with the family before it was released to the nation. It was incredibly insensitive, incredibly irresponsible of whoever leaked this information.
Lacey Peterson and her unborn son were found dead on the shores of the San Francisco Bay after she went missing Christmas Eve. Her husband, Scott, is facing trial for double murder in the deaths. Peterson said the family should have been informed about the autopsy results privately before they were released to the public. More in a moment.
You mean I could have diabetes and not even know it?
Then why would I want to know?
Heart disease, amputations, stroke, blindness, kidney disease. They all can be caused by diabetes. So it's critical that you know if you have it. But what makes diabetes so scary? Many people don't know when they have it because there are often no symptoms. Meanwhile, diabetes can be causing damage that will lead to serious problems later on. If you're over 45, you don't exercise, and you're overweight, you're at risk for diabetes. What should you do? See your doctor, because a simple blood test can detect the problem, and with early treatment, you can prevent the devastating effects of diabetes. For more information, call the American Diabetes Association at 1-800-DIABETES. That's 1-800-DIABETES. Don't be blind to diabetes.
Consumer spending dropped slightly last month by 0.1%. That follows an upwardly revised 0.8% gain in March. The new report from the Commerce Department also indicated that personal income was unchanged in April. That marks the first time since July of 2002 that incomes have not posted a monthly gain. The latest numbers renew concerns that consumer spending may be waning and a severe slide in economic activity could follow. More after this.
You're strapped in to 700 horses of pure power.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
But you're twitching from the itching, squirming from the burning, and you've got 500 laps to go.
I should have used Preparation H.
Cool it fast with Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact for fast relief.
Lap number 25.
Oh, man, I should have used Preparation H.
Preparation H Cooling Gel. Cools on contact. Uses directed.
The nine men plucked from the Kew Creek mine in Pennsylvania last summer are using their unlikely fame to help the nation's mining families make ends meet.
Since last summer's rescue, the Kew Creek Nine and community leaders have been looking for a way to use the exposure of their rescue as a way to support miners and their families across the country. Yesterday, they announced the creation of the Miracle Miners Community Foundation. It's a nonprofit group designed to help mining families with health and educational expenses. The group is already planning its first fundraiser, a three-day festival this July to commemorate the first anniversary of the rescue. It takes place July 25th to the 27th at Winbur Stadium in Somerset County, featuring concerts and other attractions. More information is available at a website at miracleminer.org. I'm Jim Loke reporting.
Leading weather experts are altering predictions on the 2003 hurricane season to include a greater number of storms. The team from Colorado State University estimates there will be 14 named storms this year, with 8 becoming hurricanes. I'm Erica Kane, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
I'm Bobby Ligas with today's Car Clinic Minute. A picture's worth a thousand words, so picture this. A toilet bowl. You know what car part is similar to that household favorite? Battery? Gas tank? No, those won't float. But when I come back, I'll tell you what does.
Doug is frugal.
Well, money doesn't grow on trees, you know.
The problem is Doug is about to buy a used car.
Yep, and I'm going to get ripped off!
And Doug doesn't know about Carfax, which lets you check a used car's history to see if it's been in an accident, has accurate mileage, stuff like that. So you know your money's well spent.
So I might save thousands?
Exactly, Doug. Just go to CARFAX.com or ask your dealer for a Carfax vehicle history report.
Hey, how about we go halvesies on the car?
How about nunsies?
How about sumsies?
No. Carfax, the truth about used cars.
What's the automotive equivalent of your toilet bowl? Your carburetor. Both have little floats that control levels of liquid. Ever lifted the top of a toilet tank and bent the rod to stop water from flowing? Carburetors have similar float valves that adjust fuel level. In toilets, the excess water streams harmlessly to the sewer. But in carburetors, surplus fuel flows into the motor, causing engine damage, decreased gas mileage, and air pollution. All good reasons to include carburetor checks in your annual inspections. I'm Bobby Likas. Like us, you'll love us.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome to the Peter Werby Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Hey, gang, here I am at Seppi's at the Parker Meridian Hotel in beautiful Midtown Manhattan, West 57th Street, slightly to the left of Carnegie Hall. The phone number here, I'll say it again, is 800-825-5937. I'd love to hear from you. I want to talk to you in the remaining hour of this show. Sitting in for Peter Werby today. A few things on my mind. I'll get right to your calls. You know, this is the last weekend for free speech in America, because on Monday the FCC is going to finally remove the remaining ownership limitations that stop big companies from controlling every single thing we hear, see, and read. And finally, this last week, the mass media decided to start paying attention to this very important issue. CNN ran their story today, and Nightline did its story a couple nights ago. Ted Koppel decided to look at this issue, which is going to remake the media landscape. It's just surprising that these companies, these huge companies, which already own the major media, haven't devoted more resources to letting the American people know that there's been a public comment period, that they could have called the FCC and let the FCC know how they feel about the issue of media ownership. Today in the Washington Post, Ted Turner weighed in on the subject. Ted Turner is against removing ownership rules. He said if these rules had been in place, the rules which would allow large companies to own virtually everything, he said if these rules had been in place in 1970, it would have been impossible for him to start Turner Broadcasting or to launch CNN. He quotes Justice Hugo Black, and I'm going to get to my point here, and then I'll go to your call, so don't go away. Justice Hugo Black wrote in 1945, "The First Amendment rests on the assumption that the widest possible dissemination of information from diverse and antagonistic sources is essential to the welfare of the public." Get that. Diverse and antagonistic sources of information is essential to the welfare of the public. So my question is, why are we, the American people, why does it seem we are more comfortable with agreement than argument? The First Amendment depends on argument. It is essential that we have argument, that we have antagonistic viewpoints being aired. That's what the First Amendment is about. If we are patriots, if we believe in America, why are we not more comfortable with arguments? Because right now, it seems if you don't agree with the majority or agree with the prevailing viewpoint, you are slapped down. You're called unpatriotic, un-American. How have we gotten to this point where we, the American people, have as a default mode agree? Agree and get along rather than argue, have diverse and antagonistic viewpoints. That's what made this country great. That's what this country was founded on, argument and free expression, the free marketplace of antagonistic ideas. But now we just seem to want everyone to agree. The phone number here is 800-825-5937. I'd like to know what you think. TJ in Texas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello.
Hello.
You're doing a great job today. Good show.
No, I thank you. I'm glad you're enjoying yourself.
I wanted to say I really enjoyed the conversation you and David were having. I think that that was a really good debate that you two had. And it got me thinking about one of the foundational documents of our democracy, the Declaration of Independence. It's a really great document.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to talk about a couple of things that are from it that I think speak directly to what's going on in our government today, what our nation is going through today. And they're talking about their King George, but often I think they're talking about our King George. They say, "He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. Mm-hmm. He has kept among us in times of peace standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation."
Aha. Uh-huh. And we have the right to throw off this tyranny.
Exactly. In fact, and we have to pledge our fortunes and our sacred honors to do that.
Well, that's right. And that is exactly right. It is sacred honor to uphold the principles of this country. And if we do not uphold those principles, we have forsaken our honor.
Exactly. And I also wanted to mention why I think the media hasn't really been talking about the FCC rules that are coming up for a vote soon. It would be too burdensome to bother the public from distracting us from the soap opera of Chandra Levy. Soap opera,
right.
Which was a continuation of the soap opera of the Clinton Lewinsky scandal, a continuation of the soap opera of O.J. Simpson's trial.
That's right. And now we have the Lacey Peterson soap opera. Last week, the commission, the September 11th commission, looking into the events that led up to September 11th, had a public hearing. Was this broadcast on CNN?
No.
No. I turned on CNN expecting to see it. No, it was Lacey Peterson. I turned on Fox News. Maybe they'd show it because they seem to love anything that has to do with the war on terror. Nope, wasn't there. They had summer travel bargains.
Right. You had to Sorry, go ahead.
It's hopeless. It is hopeless. They are not.
You had to go to the commission's website and read the transcripts that were there.
Yeah.
I did see it
on C-SPAN at midnight. I saw it on C-SPAN. Last night, by the way, before I let you go, TJ, I was saying before, I was at the Partnership for Public Service. They had their gala dinner trying to raise money to get people to not volunteer, but to seek a career in government. You know, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country.
Right.
Don't become a big rich elitist investment banker on Wall Street. Instead, why don't you go work in the government, at least for a few years, use your brains and your skills to help this government, which is the people's government, by the way. It ain't King George's government from Mars. It is a...
Right.
Let's help this government do what it's supposed to be doing with some of the best and the brightest, right? That's the idea. When I was there, I met Richard Benveniste, who was on the September 11th commission. And he said the Bush administration is testing them. How much can they withhold? How much information can be withheld from this commission? And what will the commission do if the information is withheld? And he believes that the administration is trying to withhold as much information as possible to see what they can get away with. They're being tested right now. They're in
right.
a testing period. So we'll see what happens with this commission. But you ain't going to see it on CNN. No. I don't even think they told us it was meeting. It was unbelievable.
I certainly never heard about it.
No, I read about it someplace in the back
someplace
pages of a newspaper.
Obscure.
Yeah, yeah.
Buried
unbelievable.
Off the back pages.
Yeah. TJ, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And hope you have a great weekend. Let's see. Stan in Alabama. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Curtis.
Good afternoon, Stan. How are you doing today?
Pretty good. I hope y'all are doing well.
Oh, I am. I am.
Good. The current FCC development is another massive double-talk Orwellian subterfuge, which is also going to shortly destroy small business in this country well within a generation. The pea-brain Marlboro man is Bush. Bush the Marlboro man comes along on his Texas horse, and he appoints an Uncle Tom to empower small mom-and-pop radio stations by stomping them in the ground with big business cartels. That's all this
right.
comes down to. The
That's
Bush right. workers couldn't be evil because they wear the white hats of mom-and-pop stores, so the Powell FCC director couldn't possibly be an Uncle Tom who would spray us down with George Wallace fire hoses, like in 1964. Powell's not really an Uncle Tom. He's just the Idi Amin dictator of radio, and this proves that such things as cannibalism is impossible in predatory capitalism, because the victims of cannibalism and predatory capitalism, the American public, are not even aware that they've been eaten alive because they've been microwaved.
That's right.
I issue this warning. Katie Couric and Tom Brokaw, watch out. You're going to wind up on the barbecue, too, before it's over.
That's right. Thank you for that warning, Stan. That was very well put. I remember that everybody used to talk about that frog in the saucepan, that if you throw a frog into a pot of boiling water, he'll jump out. But if you put a frog in a pot of water and then slowly bring it to a boil, he'll be cooked before he knows he's cooked, and he won't jump out. And that's what's happening to the American people. We've got creeping fascism here, corporate takeover America, step by step, inch by inch, and before we know it, we're going to be over Niagara Falls. We're going to be deep in the water of corporate control. And, Pat, you are calling from someplace, but you're on the air right in Cincinnati. You're on the air.
Yeah, well, let me give you an example of how the media has consolidated now. You're familiar with the basic idea of the Christian Bible, right?
I've heard of it.
Now, between the time that Jesus was in the temple and the time that he first started on his ministry, what do you know about Jesus?
Very little.
Okay. Before George
I'll confess
Bush,
I'm, I'll
before
confess
George
I'm
W.
Jewish.
Bush was 40 years old, what have you heard about George W. Bush in any medium, anywhere, anytime?
Nothing.
Now
he was he had a drinking problem, but then he found Jesus.
Yeah, he found Jesus. Okay, no abortion, nothing involved in that. Nothing of drugs, nothing. Okay, but here's the thing. Now, one of my greatest heroes, I'm 53 years old, was John F. Kennedy. Now imagine this in 1962. Here's a guy who's a war hero, who's a president of the United States, who's got a beautiful wife, and the number one song in America, Jimmy Dean, before the sausage came along, the PT-109. So here we're singing the praises. I mean, this is a guy that inspired a generation.
Yeah.
Now, there's an old Irish saying. By the way, I speak Irish.
Oh.
I'll make it real fast. It's got a couple hundred years old. It goes, Nianic Anshul Kapalas Dasil. And what it basically means is, all the world can't make a racehorse out of a jackass. So the people that handle this little moron, they can't make him a Kennedy. So what do? They destroy Kennedy. You know.
All right.
And now here's some other pervert.
Hold that thought there, Pat. We'll be with you. You just heard Gaelic on this station. 1-800-825-5937.
Attention all plaintiffs. If personal injury, medical malpractice, accident, or other disaster has left you helpless and desperate, call now 800-586-5493 and receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Express lawsuit funding provides no risk, no payments needed cash to people with pending lawsuits. The money is yours until your case settles. You pay nothing. We only collect when your lawsuit settles. Call us now. 800-586-5493. Your lawsuit has merit, and the cash is yours to do with whatever you need. Take care of living expenses, credit cards, car payments. No payments needed until your case settles. No employment requirements. No credit checks. Call now. 800-586-5493. Your cash is waiting for your call. Express Lawsuit Funding is waiting to help you. Call 800-586-5493.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit? Bad credit? No credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now. 1-800-823-0157.
Remember when George W. was campaigning and claiming, I'm a uniter, not a divider? Well, I have to give credit where credit is due. In one stroke, Bush has managed to do the impossible. Unite the American Conservative Union with the American Civil Liberties Union, as well as bringing other staunchly conservative groups together with avowedly liberal ones. Let's hear it for the great uniter. Unfortunately for George, what has united these disparate forces is their opposition to an absolutely atrocious piece of legislation that his administration had hoped to sneak by us. It's called Patriot Act 2, A nasty follow-up to the liberty-busting, democracy-stifling USA Patriot Act, which John Mad Dog Ashcroft rammed through a panicked Congress just days after the horrendous September 11th terrorist attacks. Patriot 2 would give us Ashcroft on Viagra. Ugly. Among other uglies, this act would increase federal power to make secret arrests of U.S. citizens, let the government search your telephone, bank, and credit records without court supervision, and, for the first time, authorize the Attorney General to strip any American of their citizenship. All that the government has to do is to declare, by executive whim, that a case involves suspicions of terrorism, and bammo, there go your most basic rights. Patriot 2 is so ugly that the Bushites even lied to Congress that it exists. Trying to cover his ample butt, Ashcroft still asserts that it's not really a legislative proposal, but merely some ideas bouncing around his Justice Department. However, an internal document titled Domestic Security Enhancement Act of 2003 has surfaced, and it looks, reads, and smells exactly like a legislative proposal. This is Jim Hightower saying, I'd trust a wolf to guard my last pork chop before I'd trust the Bushites to guard my liberties. To guard against their Patriot Act, too, call the American Civil Liberties Union, 212-549-2500.
It's the Peter Werby Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Yeah, gang, I'm here at Seppi's at the Parker Meridian Hotel with you. If you call 800-825-5937, we got about 35 minutes left of the broadcast today, and I'm glad to hear from you. Pat in Cincinnati, you've been patiently holding on after you spoke Gaelic to me.
Right. I speak Gaelic.
You speak Gaelic.
Well,
you should talk to Douglas Ross. Maybe he could be on his new show. I don't know.
Oh, well, I wonder what the audience would be like. Well, anyway, no, but here's my thing. Here's my greatest hero, John F. Kennedy. Now, this creep who wrote the latest scandal about Kennedy was on public radio yesterday. And every time he comes to a source, it's, well, this confidential, or I heard this, or, like I say, I don't know whether he's listening on a bathroom stall or where his sources are, but they're not credible at all.
Right.
Now, here's the thing. I feel, and I honestly believe, that there is a concentrated effort, because you can't make Bush interesting, to make the Kennedy myth disinteresting. If you are forced to watch cable TV for 3 hours, whether you're in a hospital bed or whatever, any cable TV station in this country, and you're surfing around, you will not go 3 or 4 hours without seeing something about Roswell, something about Sasquatch, or something about Kennedy and Marilyn Monroe.
Right, right.
Now,
yeah.
If you buy food in a grocery store, for the past 35 years, eye level, in your face, National Enquirer, and you know the rest of the names of them. Kennedy, Kennedy killed, Kennedy had sex with.
All right, so what's your point?
Over and over. My point is this. Since you can't make Bush something, you've got to debunk the idealism of the other thing.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, I was so surprised. I shouldn't have been surprised, but I just thought it was so typical, actually. Yet I'm constantly surprised by what's typical, I guess. Why are we talking about Kennedy? When they brought up this new biography of Kennedy and the woman he had an affair with when she was 17 and now she's 61 years old or something. It's like, why are they telling us about Kennedy? He's been dead for 40 years. Why don't you tell us about the weirdo crowd that's in the White House now? They won't tell us about that. They're militantly opposed to telling us about how this guy went AWOL when he was supposed to be in the Texas Air National Guard. They won't tell us about that, but they're going to tell us about, oh, my God, Kennedy slept with a teenager. Oh, gee whiz. I mean, how pointless is this? The news media will not give us the news that matters. They will not give us the news that we can use to make important, informed decisions about today. Instead, they tell us about affairs that presidents long dead had 40 years ago. I mean, it is totally ridiculous.
I'm just saying, just to wrap it up, I mean, if you don't have much of a brain, you honestly would believe that George Bush is a war hero, strutting around in his pilot suit, and people who actually went to war, like John Kerry, and served their country and were decorated, are traitors. That's how crazy this news thing has become.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Pat. It's always a pleasure hearing from you. Call again, and let's go to Bill in Santa Fe.
Oh, hi, Curtis. Tuning in late, like your show. Now, here's something that they're talking about in the White House. Assistant Secretary of Defense Paul Wolfowitz is quoted in a news report out about 2 hours ago in an interview in Vanity Fair saying the real reason we're in Iraq is we needed a place for our troops that had to leave Saudi Arabia.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And that, the nuclear business, the weapons of mass destruction, was the only reason everyone in the White House could agree on as the excuse.
Right.
Now, but I've heard this report. You might want to check it out and ask your listeners about it.
Yeah, I've heard that report. I read that. It was picked up by the London papers, but it's apparently in the new issue of Vanity Fair coming out. But yeah, it's been picked up by the London papers. It's a bureaucratic reason. The weapons of mass destruction was something all of the people in the White House could agree on. It sounds like a good cover story. Let's use this one.
Well,
great.
Catching up.
Thanks, all right. Curtis. Thank you, Bill. Take care. Now, we got more coming up, so don't go away. I want you to call 800-825-5937. Find out what's going on the mass media. Why are they paying straight men to act gay instead of telling us the information we need to be a self-governing republic?
Philip.
Constance.
Oh, Philip, I can't take this anymore. I want to be free.
You mean you want to be free of me, the kids, and the dirty laundry?
No.
Oh.
I want to be free of overnight laxatives that give me cramps.
Darling, that means Freelax.
What's so different about Freelax?
It's the only overnight laxative that gives you stimulant-free, cramp-free relief in just 2 caplets.
If I take Freelax tonight, I'll get relief before the kids start fighting over breakfast?
Depend on it. Freelax is the free of everything you hate about laxatives, laxative. Use only as directed.
You're listening to The Peter Werby Show. Family Talk with Mike Riera is next on IE America Radio Network.
Words can pose cultural and religious barriers to solving environmental problems. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. The Ganges River starts high in the Himalayas and drains a large part of the Indian subcontinent. It carries a flood of pollutants, such as raw sewage from India's largest cities, along with animal carcasses and detergents. Environmentalists are working to clean up the Ganges, but early efforts have run into a tangle of words. Gary Gardner of the World Watch Institute says describing the river as polluted offends the religious views of many Indians.
There are divergent views in India between environmentalists and devout Hindus about the status of the Ganges River, because the Ganges is regarded as a goddess by religious people, indeed by most Indians.
Gardner says the conflict is over the level of respect seen in words used to characterize the river. He says Hindus view the Ganges River as a divine source of purification.
Now, these people would not deny that there are contaminants in the water, but they would argue that it does not change the essential nature of the river. And that can be an obstacle to efforts to clean up the river. For some Hindus, it's almost as though the efforts to clean up the river are an insult to the goddess, the Mother Ganga, as the Ganges is called.
Gardner says environmentalists have had to learn to understand not just the biology of the river, but its spiritual significance as well. And he says they've made progress by working with religious leaders. Gardner says people there have developed a new language for talking about the Ganges. It defines the river as pure in a religious sense no matter what. Its environmental condition is debated as a separate issue. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
The chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued.
Two of them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
On the
IE America Radio Network.
The Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com.
We're back. It's the Peter Werby Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Yeah, here I am at Seppi's at the Parker Meridian Hotel in beautiful Midtown Manhattan, West 57th Street. Come on by, get something to eat, and watch the show. Or just listen to the show, or you can even call in at 800-825-5937. Hey, you might want to go to our website, www.ieamericaradio.com. I have an entire page. I have a whole column, an entire page of movie reviews, because I am the entertainment correspondent for this network, as well as a talk show host here. I've written about The Matrix Reloaded. They've written about Capturing the Freedmans. Earlier in the show, I had a couple of the filmmakers on who made this incredible documentary about the mass hysteria that engulfed a family in Long Island, New York, and got them sent to prison. They were sent to prison for like 100 counts of child sex abuse, which apparently never happened. But it's just amazing what the media can whip up, get this mass hysteria going. And, you know, on Monday, the FCC is going to rule. We're going to have greater concentration of media. Few companies are going to own everything. It's going to be like the Soviet Union with one-party rule. One company will control the airwaves and the TV stations and the radio stations and the newspapers and God knows what else. But while we're worrying about that, I wanted to talk about something good that's happening in the world. Yes, there is something good. But before I talk about something good, I will talk about one other disturbing thing. Yeah, I will. But I'll make it palatable by laughing about it. Now, what's happening is you might have noticed the economy has gone south lately. It's not what it used to be. A lot of people are losing their jobs, getting laid off. The government is cutting back on a lot of its welfare benefits and knocking people off welfare. And where they are going, where are people going to make ends meet? How are they keeping from going hungry? A lot of them are going to food kitchens and to food pantries. And there's been an article in the newspaper here locally about the fact that all the food pantries and all the food kitchens in New York are getting more and more crowded. They're getting more and more customers, if you can call them customers, even though they don't have to pay. More people are showing up because they need the food, and they need the hot meals or the packaged food. And so there's just been an increase in demand for all of these services. So I have on the phone with me Andrea Koppel, who's from City Meals on Wheels. Andrea Koppel has been working with this group for a while, and I'm so glad you could take a few minutes to join me today.
Well, thank you for having me.
There's going to be a big fundraiser on Monday. If you happen to be in the New York area, you're going to want to come down to Rockefeller Center. They've got the best chefs from all over the nation. If, wherever you live in America, just pick out the best restaurant, and I'll bet that chef is going to be at Rockefeller Center on Monday donating his or her services and food to help raise money for City Meals on Wheels. Now, what does Meals on Wheels do?
Well, Meals on Wheels across the country delivers nutritious meals mostly every day to homebound, frail, and isolated elderly. And there's a Meals on Wheels program in every neighborhood, in every state in this country.
Wow. Now, how did this start? When did it start?
Well, Meals on Wheels as a program in this country started in the late 60s and early 70s when the Older Americans Act was passed by the U.S. Congress, and as part of that, it provided funding for home-delivered meals for frail and isolated elderly, knowing that to keep them healthy and well-nourished in their own homes was the was the most humane thing to do and the most cost-effective thing to do. It was really the best public policy. And so 30 years later, the program is going strong. And these days, the oldest old, the frail and chronically ill elderly, are among the fastest groups, population groups growing in the country today.
Yeah, because everybody's
true,
living longer, and so people are living longer, and they're getting older.
Exactly, and they're living longer, and they're living healthier, but they are living with more chronic illnesses and more special needs. And still, the best thing to do is to keep them in their own homes, independent and well-nourished. And that's what Meals on Wheels programs do across the country, and that's what City Meals on Wheels does here in the five boroughs in New York City.
Now, but you are not a government program. This is a private-public partnership.
That's exactly right. We're a private-public a public-private partnership. We are an independent charity. We raise private funds to supplement the government-funded Meals on Wheels program. Here in New York City, the need is so great that the government funds really only stretch to cover one meal a day, 5 days a week. And we all believe that frail and isolated elderly need to eat every day of the week.
A concept.
Yeah, exactly. And some of them even need more than one meal a day. So what City Meals on Wheels does is we raise private funds to fill in all those gaps, and that's what we've been doing for 20 years.
Now, I understand that the private funds that you raise, 100 cents of every dollar, every penny that you raise privately actually goes into food and getting the food on into people's apartments.
That's right. All the donations from the public, all of the private donations, go directly to the preparation and delivery of meals. It's what we call our 100% rule, and I think it's part of the key to our success as a charity. It's something that's very dear to the hearts of our board, and we're able to do that because we receive designated grants from government sources and from foundations and from our own board members, and those designated grants cover our administrative costs and our fundraising costs. So when people receive a City Meals on Wheels fundraising letter, they know that when they send in money, all of it's going to go towards meals. It will not go towards more letters or towards my salary or anybody else's.
Oh, gosh. And I'm not getting any kickback from them to put you on the air. That's not where the donation money's going. It's not going to my pocket either. So,
So
back in the 70s, when we had a different kind of government, they passed a law that said we're going to deliver food. We the people are going to take some of we the people's tax money, and we're going to deliver food to the homebound elderly. Now, has that funding, that government funding, has it kept pace? Has it grown as the population of old people has grown?
It has grown in dribs and drabs, but the population of the frail elderly has grown in leaps and bounds. So it's really like running to catch up with a moving train. The federal funding is just not keeping pace with the demand. And here in New York City, just to give you an idea, I want to tell you a couple of things. When the federal law was first passed, the federal government was paying 70% of the cost of the government-funded home-delivered meals program. Now it's the reverse. The federal funding is only paying 30% of the government funds that go into Meals on Wheels here in New York City. So the city and the state have kicked in more and more to keep pace with the demand, and the federal funding has just not grown. Also, to tell you something else, since City Meals on Wheels was founded, our network of 120 neighborhood-based meal centers were serving 6,000 clients every day, 6,000 homebound elderly. Now, basically, that same network is straining to feed nearly 17,000 homebound elderly every day.
Wow, 6,000 to 17,000.
Right.
That's an incredible growth. Now, in a way, somebody might say that this is an example of how charity is supposed to work. The government starts something, and then the private sector and private charities and private individuals come in and pick up the rest of the weight.
Well, you know, we think it is a good partnership. We think that, you know, Meals on Wheels and providing nutrition for the homebound elderly is an incredibly popular cause. And we feel that we're doing a real service by giving New Yorkers a lot of different ways to give to that cause. And we're tapping into, we think, money that wouldn't otherwise be given to charity. So we think it's a good public-private partnership. We also do want to make sure, though, that the government continues to do its part. It's a partnership, and we want to do our share, but we're always advocating for the government to do its share. And up until very recently, with New York's fiscal crisis, the city certainly has kicked in more and more towards this program.
Right. Your expertise, you've been at this, City Meals on Wheels has been at it for quite a number of years, and you've told us about the incredible task you have in front of you. You've gone from feeding 6,000 people to 16,000, and you have, I understand, you've shared your expertise with other groups across the country. If somebody is interested in setting up one of these or facilitating one of these private-public partnerships in other cities across the country, they have gotten some help from you folks here in New York.
They have. In the past, we've helped Meals on Wheels organizations in Boston, in Chicago, in San Francisco to beef up their private fundraising and learn from what City Meals on Wheels has done in terms of tapping into the generosity of all walks of life in a city, from private, small individuals to restaurants, to corporations, to foundations, and especially the restaurant community has been incredibly important to really launching and maintaining the success of our fundraising, and that's what Monday Night's event is all about.
Yeah, you've got some of the great fancy restaurants from all over the country. The chefs are coming in to participate, and it's kind of funny. I like to think of it as they spend most of their time feeding the rich elitists of this country, so now they're going to take a little bit of their time and money and energy to help feed some of the poorest people of the country.
Well, I think that's why the restaurant community is a natural match with the cause of Meals on Wheels. These are meals for people who can't come out to a nice restaurant, who, haven't had a restaurant meal maybe in an awfully long time. And I think that people who live in New York's food community with all its excess and all its sumptuous luxury, I think they do know. They are in touch with reality, and that's why they really want to help those less fortunate.
Yeah. Andrea Copel, thank you for being here. Now, if somebody wants to get more information about City Meals on Wheels, or maybe donate money or find out how they could put together a program like this in their community, how can they get in touch with you?
Well, they can always call our office at 212-687-1234. Or a great thing to do is visit our website, which is www.citymeals.org.
citymeals.org,
right.
citymeals.org.
That's right.
Well, I think that's a great thing, and this is the way we've been told by our compassionate conservative leaders that charity is supposed to work, that the private sector is supposed to help pick up and carry the weight that the government sets an example for, and I suppose as we all get older, this is a real good place to start. Thank you so much, Andrea, and you have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. The number here is 800-825-5937. We've still got a few minutes left in the show, about 15 minutes, in fact, and I'd love to hear from you, 800-825-5937. My name's Curtis Ellis. It seems that I spend a lot of time out there amongst the charity groups in New York. Last night I was at the Partnership for Public Service. I've mentioned that a few times. It's this group of rich elitists who are trying to encourage other rich elitists to use their time and their money, if they don't have time, use their money to encourage other people to seek careers in the government, because in the next few years, a lot of the workforce of the government is going to be of retirement age, and everybody wants to become a rock star or a celebrity athlete or an investment banker, and nobody's thinking about public service as a way to go. The idea of working in the government, the government's been bad-mouthed now for 20 years. These are just bureaucrats and bureaucrats. It's not the government's money, it's the people's money. Well, excuse me, it's the people's government. And unless we want to live in a state of nature, unless you want to go live out in the forest or on top of a mountain, you're going to need government. For 5,000 years, social humans have had governments. The great innovation in the last 200-some years is the idea that the government is accountable to the people rather than vice versa. And you don't just get rid of government. No, you have a government that responds to the wishes of the governed and is subject to the will of the governed. Of course, that seems like a great innovation in this climate. Well, anyway, while I was at this event, Partnership for Public Service, last night, I ran into Paul Volcker. Now, Paul Volcker is not some pinko communist. Paul Volcker is a big, rich financier. He used to be head of the Federal Reserve Board. He had the job that Alan Greenspan has now. And Paul Volcker was appointed by that other pinko, Ronald Reagan. So here you have Paul Volcker, chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. Actually, I correct myself. He might have been appointed by Jimmy Carter. It is very possible. Yes, he was appointed by Jimmy Carter, and he was there during the Reagan administration, and he had to live through those great budget-busting deficits that were created by the Reagan tax plan. Well, I asked him what he thought of this new tax bill that was just passed, and this is what Paul Volcker told me last night at the Partnership for Public Service gala dinner.
What do you think of this latest round of tax cuts in the face of the fiscal situation, deficits, and the general fiscal policy of this administration?
I think they're imprudent.
Now, they say deficits don't matter. It's a small percentage of the GDP.
Well, every little bit at the margin looks small, but we are running into big deficits here. We have a low savings rate in the United States. We're heavily dependent upon the savings of foreigners, the mercy of strangers in some sense, and it's not a healthy long-run position. Now, it's not going to be a catastrophe in the short run, but I think the basic structure goes in the wrong direction. And I think, you know, there was a lot of trickery in the way the numbers were calculated. And the assumption that certain tax reductions would stop when they obviously won't stop.
When you were at the Fed during the Reagan years, it was explicitly, they came out and said afterwards that their policy with these tax cuts was to starve the government of resources. If they didn't have the revenues, they would be able to get rid of some of these social programs. And that seems to be clearly the policy of this administration.
Well, kind of the hidden policy, I think. I'm not sure the Reagan people ever said that plainly, but there was a lot of feeling beneath the surface that that's part of what they were after. The trouble is it doesn't work without big deficits.
Unbelievable. Paul Volcker against tax cuts. 800-825-5937. Let's hear what you have to say. I'm Curtis Ellis.
This is the house that Jack built.
Daddy, faster!
The tree house. These are the 12 planks of wood Jack carried. The 200 nails he hammered. The broken ladder he climbed. And this is the back pain and the neck pain Jack had until he tried Thermacare. 8 hours of penetrating heat for powerful pain relief and deep muscle relaxation. Because after he built the house...
What about the curtains?
Jack had to decorate. Pick up a Thermacare and wrap yourself in relief.
How is the GM 24-hour test drive different from the average test drive? It's about, 23 hours and 45 minutes longer. Long enough to take a GM car or truck to work, to keep it overnight. See how it fits in your garage. See how it fits in your life. For more information and to locate a participating dealer, click to gm.com/24-hour. You must be 21 and be an insured licensed driver with approved credit.
I'm asleep on it. I'll give you an answer in the morning.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
Make the doctor's choice your choice. For better relief, advance to Advil.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil, Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video, call Power, Performance, and Possibilities. Call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
The IE America Radio Network delivers progressive information and entertaining programming throughout the week and weekends. The Doug Steffen Talk Radio Countdown on Saturday mornings features the top 10 stories and issues in talk radio across the USA, followed by the Bobby Likas Car Clinic. If it has to do with your vehicle, Bobby Likas will tell you how to fix it the right way. The Home Improvement Experts and Home Improvement USA will answer your home fix-up questions. And if you like antiques, you'll love Antique Talk with Christopher Kent. Pet owners, you can ask your questions about your loving pets during Talking Pets with John Patch. Sunday mornings begin with the best of Doug Steffen Talk Radio Countdown, followed by the employee's lawyer, Stephen Sack. For you high-tech wizards, Into Tomorrow with Dave Graveline will keep you informed with the latest news on today's technology. Ramblin' with Ramsey will update you on the hot vacation spots around the world. Then the real animals come out during the live Sunday evening call-in show, Animal Talk.
It's a cross between Wild Kingdom and Saturday Night Live.
Mark Hannes, Dr. Brad Davis, and Donna Blumba will answer listeners' questions about pets from fish to feline. To get these programs, call 1-800-397-8255. For now, listen to us live on the web at ieamericaradio.com.
Are you tired of being yelled at, preached at, lectured to, demagogued, ridiculed, moralized, proselytized, and abused? Why don't you try something new? Join me, Nancy Skinner, on IE America Radio Network, where we can discuss the issues of the day from a whole new and healthier perspective. Nobody gets fed to the lions. Everybody has a right to their opinions. And the best thing is you walk away feeling better about life.
That's Nancy Skinner's Radio Vox Pop. Weekdays from 10 to noon Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Peter Werby reminding you that my show is now being broadcast from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network. It's the same show filled with engaged, intelligent talk featuring not just you, the listener, but also a wide range of interesting guests. So if you want to leave right-wing hate radio in the 20th century where it belongs, join me, Peter Werby, weekdays 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time for something entirely different.
I want peace. You want peace.
We're back. It's the Peter Werby Show with special guest host Curtis Ellis. Give Curtis a call at 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937. Here's Curtis.
Yeah, stand up for your rights, folks, but don't bump your head because the ceiling's low. 1-800-825-5937. We got a few minutes left, so if you want to get in, you better get in now because then I'm leaving and you're not going to be able to get in. Well, David, you're in. David from San Francisco. Go ahead.
Hey, Curtis. Hope you have a good weekend.
Well, hey, thank you. I hope you do, too.
You know, earlier today, I was interested in hearing your Volcker quote there, and then it just reminded me that earlier today there was a National Public Radio, National Petroleum Radio's
right.
Talk of the Nation was on, and they had a little piece about the privatization of, well, they didn't want to call it privatization, but that's what the theme was, of outer space. You know, how spacecraft and, you know, the world of the future and get in now, and it was a very exciting show in their Science Friday. Well,
they
of course, didn't want to have any of that interference from government regulation.
Oh, and, gosh, no.
Yeah, and so, you know, earlier today also, or I guess yesterday, there was a scandal that's starting to emerge, and that's that the Bush administration has a potential of a $44 trillion deficit looming. I mean, we're sitting at, what, $6 trillion right now,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about a $44 trillion deficit.
Right.
Now, if you think about this idea of the big picture, you know, as Paul Volcker and the world's economists look at it, they need to have collateral. Now, if you were to think about it in terms of, say, for example, the dot-com bubble that just burst, you had a whole bunch of companies that really weren't worth what they said they were worth, but
right.
they puffed it up and puffed it up and puffed it up, and somebody was able to cash in and dump real quick, get a whole lot of cash and speculative
money. Get to your point. We're running out of time here. Get
well,
right to your point.
Well, it's essentially this idea that they're trying to balloon up the economy and give somebody the collateral of essentially all of the assets of the United States and then steal it to another land. And then with that collateral, they're able to then create a new world of the future. Unfortunately,
yeah.
what it does is it, you know, as you shoot rockets up into outer space, it burns up the ozone layer faster, so their money isn't going to be any good down here.
And you can't take it with you. David, thank you very much. David from San Francisco, it's a pleasure hearing from you. Pleasure hearing from everybody today. We learned that the media is not telling us what we need to know. Instead, they're paying straight men to act gay on this new show, which is going to be coming out on Bravo. It's been great being here with you. My name is Curtis Ellis. Go see Capturing the Freedmans. Go read about it on the website, ieamericaradio.com. And Peter Werby will be back on Monday. It's been a pleasure sitting in for him. And y'all have a nice weekend now, okay?
You've been listening to The Peter Werby Show on the IE America Radio Network. Copyright 2003.
Hello, this is Andy Dave Rush inviting you to join the fun on Home Improvement USA. Great guests and experts offer home improvement advice and keep us updated on new products and technologies. On Home Improvement USA, we give away terrific prizes to all our callers. Join me, Handy Dave, along with Ken Walchek on location at Clark Devon Hardware in Chicago and engineer and handyman Jay Brentlinger for Home Improvement USA. 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 Pacific on Saturday. Don't miss it. Home Improvement USA.
We broadcast it on Saturday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific on IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
You're listening to The Peter Werby Show. Family Talk with Mike Riera is next on IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Darren Copeland. The Israelis and Palestinians are setting their conditions for progress on Middle East peace in advance of the expected meetings in the region next week. Dori Gold, an advisor to Israeli Prime Minister Ariel Sharon, is optimistic, but remains firm that the Palestinians must end terror attacks.
And the question is, will the Palestinians disarm and dismantle the terrorist organizations that have been killing Israeli civilians over the last 2.5 years?
President Bush will travel from the Group of Eight summit to meet with Sharon and Palestinian Prime Minister Mahmoud Abbas. The mother of Lacey Peterson has gone inside the Modesto, California home of her slain daughter and retrieved some personal items. Roca family attorney Al Clark says Scott Peterson's defense team isn't pleased that Sharon Roca has entered the house.
The DA's office had called Sharon and said, you can go in the house Tuesday. Well, yesterday we got a call from Mr. Garagus, in effect, very loud manner, saying that if you want a war, you have a war. He said, nobody's going in that house till I say so. I told Sharon that.